Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, it's not my fault. I didn't do it. Blog Talk Radio had an announcement. The website's been down all morning long. It just came back on 5 minutes ago. I've been furiously emailing, notifying. I've got Josie on the line now. I'm not going to bother with the theme because we have so little time. Yeah. I've got Naomi Wolf in 25 minutes. I can't believe it. And I got a surprise for her.
Yeah. Good morning. Hey, buenos dias. Hello? Oh, no. Hello? Greg? Hello?
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please hold and you will be able to listen to the show. You are now in the queue.
Okay, let's check around the cell phone today. Damn it. Hang on,
Beth. Oh, my God. Good morning.
All right, hang on. I gotta fix something here.
Yeah, it's making all kinds of noise.
Okay, let's try it now.
Good morning.
Why is it still coming through my headset?
Let's make it clear or no.
More technical difficulties.
Yes. That's, It looks like it's still down, the site.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, good. All right, so we're just going to go with the cell phone today.
The site is still down, though.
No, the site's not down. It's up. It's working. But here's the problem, though. I'm going to try it. Let me take my microphone out, see if that makes it. Okay, you can still hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. So we're on the air. The site is working. But the problem is that when I tried to connect, the connection isn't working. So it was getting that horrible echo that you heard just a minute ago.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, the good news is I still got 20 minutes, and so I'm just moving stuff around right now.
Okay.
I tried the site
and it's saying, "Oops, the thing is not," you know, no, the little
working.
Message. I
it's
think.
Definitely fine.
Yeah. Okay.
But I gotta go manual.
All right.
So I'm gonna
well,
do.
Well, how you doing?
Okay.
Besides trying to get your site up, you know the. Radio going.
Well, you know, and the crazy part is that my website was hacked last night again, and we have all these other problems now. And it's just, you know, I think Blog Talk just does this every once in a while. And
yeah.
So the only way I was able to make it work this morning, there we go. I got my phone on a stack of books, so we're okay. Now the only way I was able to work this morning was to disconnect myself from the show. Because it had that horrible feedback and echo. So they've got connection problems. They haven't fixed everything.
Yeah.
But here's my backup. Is at least I can call into my cell phone, and it's got enough charge to keep us going for a while. So I've got tons of things to talk about. Talk about the cell phone. We might just do a shorter show today. The main thing, though, is I've got Naomi Wolf calling in, and I'll be all set for her. But why don't you tell me what's going on with you? Because there's so much news lately. Yesterday's show was a barn burner. We had a ton of things that we got to talk about.
Well, I bet. Well, The Biden administration, or Biden, paid $6 billion to Iran and for five prisoners. That is ridiculous. We don't pay terrorists, you know. It's out of control. The whole system is out of control right now. And the border is out of control completely. Illegals are coming by the thousands. Costa Rica, it's upset because 2,000 to 3,000 per day are coming through their country, with Panama and Costa Rica, you know, and they have to do something about it because it's hurting their countries too. But I think they just put on a show because the United Nations, Soros, all these groups are paying millions of dollars to this country to let all the illegals come through because, you know, you have to have an ID to come through. You cannot just come through any country. You have borders in every country. So it's all well organized. I think the president from Costa Rica is putting a big show because he was going to have a huge meeting with the president from Panama to see how they can stop this going on. But they should have stopped it a long time ago. And Mexico is the most criminal, too, because Mexico is getting all this money. The cartels are controlling the country. And now it seems like it's getting worse because now the coyotes are not involved at the moment. They're in control of everything. You cannot come through unless you pay them. So we personally know this guy that was deported. His family is still here. And right now he's working in Mexico in order for him to survive, to eat and pay for a room and board somewhere.
Right.
He makes $10 a day working with cement in order for him to come here. But his wife continues sending him money, of course. But, you know, it's just out of control. The other thing is Biden is going to give IDs to all these people once they come in, especially the men, because a lot of men are coming from the Middle East, from Venezuela, from all these countries, and they're getting over $2,000 a month for them to live. And they're providing housing, and it's just out of control. This is scary for Americans. Let me tell you, Americans.
Well, and this is what happens, you know. And I read a couple of articles on an earlier show about the Roman Empire, and what destroyed Rome was uncontrolled immigration. What's destroying West Europe is uncontrolled immigration. You know, especially people that don't want to become part of the country. What could destroy the United States is uncontrolled immigration. I don't mean legal. I mean illegal. Illegal by the government. And the government may say these people come in. The government may say that these people are you know, have permanent status, or that their immigration hearing is 10 years from now, or that, you know, they have work permits. None of that's legal. Because, first of all, the government itself isn't legal. So that makes a huge
it's
difference.
It's illegal.
And so given the situation, but there's a problem, though, because you've got every governor that's going along with it. They're not kicking out the illegals from their own state, be they Democrat or Republican. You know, they're objecting and they want more federal money, but nobody's kicking them out. Not even Abbott in Texas has put the National Guard, his whole Texas National Guard, on the border. He is a loser. But what I'm saying is, look, there's nobody, there's no mayor who's saying we are banning illegal aliens from our city. We're throwing them out. Okay. There's no Republican in Congress or in any of the state legislatures that is standing up and saying these people have to go. We are not going to take them. You know, there's nobody doing that. Even Matt Gaetz, our own congressman, is not saying these illegals have to go. They're not even saying the brand. Yeah.
You know, Greg, it's so corrupt with all these leaders, all of them. It's so corrupt because no one is doing nothing. Nobody's taking our Americans out of prison. No one has even said, let's stop the vaccine. So many people are dying. Nobody has stopped it, you know? So when there's a shooting, they try to stop everything. How come we're seeing so many people die from the shots and no one is doing nothing?
Well, I mean, here's just the most startling thing I found out. I suspected it, but now the proof is coming behind in the surroundings.
Your headsets are coming on. So it is insane what's happening to this country. And it's only going to get worse, let me tell you. Are you there? Greg? Am I talking to myself here? Anyway, this government is so corrupt to the bone. The fraud you see on everything. The voting, the school shooting, bioweapon vaccines. It's just not good. Greg, are you
okay,
there?
Okay, it cut me off. So I'm back.
I continue talking, actually. So. Yeah.
Oh, good. That's good. So that'll be on the podcast, yeah. But that's the part. I don't know how that happened. It just cut me off for some reason, but that's weird. Anyway,
yeah.
So I'm back. Hopefully that won't happen again.
Okay.
I've got to guess. That'd be I'll just tell
the corruption is so deep with this government. And you know,
right.
Greg, the other
uh-huh.
thing is I know I have a lot of friends, Jewish friends that I love dear. And one of the cousins, which I well know her, she lives in Tel Aviv. And she's saying that they're on lockdown. They got like 30 seconds to hide or to run. This is suspicious to me. And the reason I say that is because I know very well, being married to a top secret CIA in the past, I know a lot that goes on in Israel. And Israel is one of the most protective with all the weapons to their people. And this is insane that they're saying Hamas is attacking Israel the way it is. Yes, it could have been one rocket or whatever, but all this, nah, I'm not buying this completely. And the reason I say that is because they've been trying to lock down people again with the masks, with the vaccines, and people are saying that they're not going to do that. And I think they're getting in the way by locking them down and blaming Gaza for all that is going on right now. Just like Ukraine, same thing, fake war, neo-Nazis.
Why would Israel do that, especially Bibi Netanyahu, who has no tradition of locking down
people ever?
Okay.
I think he's been... They probably blackmail him for him to come back and all that. It just doesn't add up to me, sweetie. And I'm pretty quick when it comes to things like this. Things don't add up at all.
Okay. Well, let's talk
about
that.
That's my view.
No, that's okay. No, that's good. That's why I want you on, so we hear these things, especially from Israel, because the reports I'm seeing from Israel is horrible. But one thing I don't understand is Israelis are usually armed, especially if they live near Gaza. So how can nobody have a gun? I don't hear a single case of any Israeli. And I'm looking at these terrorists, you know, they look, they're shorter than most of the Israelis. I mean, they don't look that tough to me. They don't seem to be armed that well. They're just, go ahead.
Yeah. Even the teachers are armed, Greg. Even the teachers, okay? So all this is fake. This is fake. They just want to lock down people because I was talking to one of my friends in Tel Aviv, and they're on lockdown. They don't have water. They don't have electricity. They're, like, punishing the Jewish people, their government. And this is what they did here. They punish us by being locked up, no beach, no this, no that, no Lysol, and they punish all these people in Hawaii, and Stu Peter was talking to another gentleman about Hawaii, that our government directly used energy weapons against the people in Hawaii, and they have people on
I'm not sure about that. So, it seems to me pretty simple that they didn't blow the sirens, they didn't have the water, you know, they had a ridiculously high... The conditions were perfect for a fire. So the question comes in, are they using an opportunity or are they creating it? You know, Hamas has fired rockets into Israel ever since Hamas was created, 2006?
Oh, yeah.
So this is not something new. That's almost 20 years ago. Was that 17 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, so they've been around for a while. I've got articles that I thought were written yesterday, and they're written, you know, 3 years ago. About you know, the government not saying anything, the U.S. government. So does your friend say that there's no rocket attacks, that the buildings are not exploding? What's she saying?
She was telling me over the phone that she hears all the sirens, but nothing near her with a rocket. Told me yesterday we were on the phone.
Okay, no, I believe it.
She's in Tel Aviv.
Okay.
But she said that they're panicking everybody to be on lockdown. Some areas you have 30 seconds to run too high, and no one is allowed to go anywhere. So they're in completely locked down right now. And the other thing is, all of a sudden, since I think the beginning of this year, you cannot even mention the word of Jesus because you go to prison. So that's
in Israel?
Hard because, you know.
Yeah, I find that hard to
believe.
That doesn't make sense to me. But here's another question, though. With all of the people with cell phones and social media and everything else, you would think that one person would be getting, unless they have an internet lockdown. I don't know if they've done that.
So
how come not a single word from any citizen journalist, you know, like us, has gotten out? That doesn't make sense.
Everybody's panicking and locked down right now. So the military is in control. There's criminals in every country. Here, the Democrats, the radical left running the show. It's the same in every country. Okay, there's good military and bad military. But, you know, something is going on in Israel. And like you said, it's one of the most powerful countries in the world, Israel. And this should not be happening to Israel, period.
Well, you know, what's interesting, is that, well, Gaza is such a small piece of land. Have you seen how tiny it is?
No. Yeah.
Why don't you just go in and take
it? Tiny.
What's the holdup? Why would you even hesitate to do that, to not take it? You know, because with all the problems coming out of Gaza, with the tunnels, with the borders and everything else, clean it up.
Oh, yeah.
And you tell people very simply, you know, you either join Israel and live peacefully or you go to Jordan. I mean, that's where the Palestinians came from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
About go ahead.
Yeah. No, what I was going to say, I remember your reporter, I cannot think of her name, the ambassador, what's her name? That she was reporting about all this in your show. I cannot think of her name at the moment.
Which one? Which were we talking about?
But she was talking about Israel and about all this country. She was like,
Clara Lopez. Clara Lopez when she
Clara.
Yeah.
Clara was
I get her
driving
back.
All of it. And she's very good.
On. Yeah, she doesn't like some of our reports, though, so she doesn't come back. Pianki, I got you
That's
for about
okay.
7 minutes. And Pianki has a great idea for an hour. I want to do that maybe Thursday with you, so I want to talk to you off the air about that. But anyway, Pianki, what's your comment for Josie? And we got, like I said, just a little bit of time. Then you can all call back in afterwards. Naomi probably only has about half an hour, and so I'm going to jealously guard that because I got a surprise. All right, go ahead, Pianki.
I don't know what you're – heck, I was wondering, whatever you got is affecting everybody. It's like a cold.
Who, me?
Oh.
Yeah, your programming.
Why?
Your crisis.
My program's fine. Mm-hmm.
It's
my blog
talk
you got
down.
2 hours and 38 minutes. What time did you come on? At 8 o'clock?
No, but about 25 to 9.
Yeah.
Hello? The website. All right, here's the thing. The website wasn't up. I got a very special guest in 5 minutes, so I don't care about the fact that we started late. That doesn't bother me. I really, I miss talking to Brianna because she can't call till next week. I'm sorry that we shortchanged Josie and got about 20 minutes. Josie, if you want to call back anytime during the week, I have free time. Feel free. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I understand that. And Pianki, of course, we might do. I've got time after Naomi, Pianki, if you want to talk about all the things you want to talk about, that'd be
let
cool.
Let me finish since I have to get ready for work in 5 minutes. But my feelings, like I said, about Israel, it's well organized, this whole thing. And I've seen videos in the past where the people in Gaza, after Israel throws a rocket or whatever, you should see all the people lined up in body bags, and they were making a video about it. And one journalist was videotaping it, and he thought the journalist left, and this guy kind of like got up from the body bag. So it's just ridiculous, the whole thing. I mean, I hope I'm wrong about it, because it's sad what is happening to all these people, you know, dragging women from this truck, and it's just horrible. The videos that they're, you know, the regular news is not putting, but they're out there. But this whole corruption is being run in our country by the United Nations, George Soros, Obama, because Obama promised that he would transform the United States, and he's transforming the whole world, not just America. And that's where we're at right now, the transformation of their way or the highway. And it's just, we just have to pray about our country, our people, and we have to stand against all the illegals coming in, and they're coming by the thousands, thousands every day, Craig. It is.
No, I know. It's an invasion.
Very hard.
And here's what I have to say about Israel. Keep working on it. Find out what you can. I absolutely believe this Hamas attack is real. I don't think they can fake that much in the news. But how much of it is real, that's what we need to find out. And so if your friend in Tel Aviv and anybody else you know in Israel, they're welcome to come on the show. We do have a Skype line. They can call directly in. You know, so it's easy to do. You just call the regular show number, and then that connects you to an account, and I verify the account, and then people can call in. We used to have Barry Shaw calling in from Israel, and we'll have to get him back.
Yeah, we were we were talking to WhatsApp only, not regular phone. So I don't know what's going on, but we'll find out more. The truth always comes out eventually, you know, Greg. Like it or not, believe it or not, you know, it will come out eventually on everything that we're seeing, our eyes are witnessing in this world. So, but you guys have a blessed day, and I'll be listening, and can hardly wait to hear Dr. Judy coming on. She says she's going to call.
I haven't told Naomi about that. In fact, that's going to be a fun surprise, but apparently they haven't talked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So. That's okay. No, don't worry about it. No, it's no problem. No. I mean, it's close to the show. I don't care. I just didn't want to broadcast everywhere yet because it is kind of a surprise. But, so like I said, Naomi should be here.
I'll be listening.
And,
all right.
Okay. Sounds good.
Talk to you next week and pray for all these people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, find out what you can.
All right.
We'll keep chatting. Yeah.
I will.
Okay.
God bless you, Bianchi.
God bless you, too, Joe. Oh, he already left. He'll be back. So this is a crazy show this morning. I have, I feel weird talking to my cell phone rather than a microphone. We're having all these technical difficulties. It's a mess. So, again, as soon as Naomi calls in, I'm checking email just to make sure that my folks realize that life is okay and the show is going on. And we'll just keep there. It looks like they got the message. Okay, good. So I'll keep going. I hesitate to play anything right now just because I want to maximize our time. So let me just tell you. I've got some stuff here on Naomi Wolf. I mean, she is amazing, some of the things she's done. I've got some biography. It says where's this from? This is the information I got. So let me just share some stuff about Naomi Wolf. It says, nope, that's Josie back again. And so let's see what's going on.
Hey, Greg, can you keep me on?
Yeah.
I'm going to mute myself because I cannot get through the internet so I can continue listening to you guys, okay?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah,
so just mute me and I'll mute myself. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Josie. There we go. All right. So there we go. Yeah. See all the fun we have here? Today's improvised. I'm just pushing buttons. This is why I can multitask. like I say, I've got, for folks who don't know how to do this, if you want to be a Blog Talk Radio talk show host, what you have to do is you got to be able to work your keyboard with your left hand, mouse with the right hand, talk to your cell phone at the same time, and keep everything going. Let me get my bio, my time when she gets here. And this is the stuff I got to read. But I've been reading about her anyway. In fact, I made some comments on her Substack article, which she may or may not recognize. We'll find out in a minute. She's due now. So we'll see. Anyway, it says, in this uncompromising investigation into today's most urgent issues, Naomi Wolf uses her own wildly politicized pilgrimage from New York Times bestselling author and high-level Democrat consultant to a journalist cast out from the elite political and social circles that once moved through is a stunning narrative framework that is both chilling and incisive. I don't know who writes this material. This is great. Anyway, she wrote a book called Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith, and Resistance in the New Dark Age. And so first thing I ask, I mean, the title is everything, so that's it. In fact, there she is. So just reading a little bio material. So just to, I'll get my guest of the day thing up here, but just to explain to Naomi, we're having all kinds of technical difficulties. Things are crazy now. I have to call my own show. I'm on my cell phone. But if something happens, just hang there. I'll call back in, and I'll get you back, and we'll do what we do best, which is improvise no matter what. So let me announce my guest of the day, Naomi Wolf. So the material I got was just great information. It said we have one of the most influential feminists. Dr. Wolf is a best-selling author, columnist, and performer, professor. She's a graduate of Yale University and Oxford. She is co-founder and CEO of DailyClout.io. Dr. Wolf has long challenged conventional narratives on gender, foreign policy, economics, and journalism. She exposes the threats to liberty and democracy, providing audiences with the tools to fight back against powerful institutional forces. Wolf has written 8 best-selling books on nonfiction, including The Beauty Myth, Give Me Liberty, and The End of America. And with that, let's bring on my special guest, Naomi Wolf. Welcome to Action Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm sorry your comms are upended. I've had a lot of days like that. So no worries on my end.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, no, we had the show, the website only came back about 20 minutes ago. So we've been feverishly communicating. Oh, yeah, and I'm on my cell phone. I had such an echo, I couldn't use that. But let's do the first thing, which, of course, is give you a round of applause. And I know you've got a ton of questions for you, but let's start with the book first, and then I want to tell you. We've actually communicated. I made some comments on your Substack articles about vaccine product liability legislation. That's me. I'm that guy.
Oh,
I don't remember those.
Yeah, so we'll
talk about that a bit. Let's talk about your book, Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith, and Resistance in the New Dark Age. So let's go to the beginning. Who's the beast?
Ha, who is the beast indeed? Well, so literally that title comes from a section in the book, which I also wrote about on Substack, in which we have a bear in our backyard, and the bear was like circling the house trying to get in. And I had grabbed a BB gun by mistake and also don't know how to shoot a gun yet, and was locked in the bathroom. So that was the beast, because what that metaphor was is I didn't want to look out the window. I thought, like, I was in that state of shock where if you just don't, you think, well, if I just don't look out the window, the bear will go away. And so that was a metaphor for a revelation, which is a central revelation about the times we're in, that original research of mine has identified, that the mRNA injections are manufactured by China, and that the IP has been transferred to China per the SEC filing of BioNTech, the Pfizer, the injections. That was transferred 100% in 2021. And China produced 1 billion doses for external use. Their own people are not given this injection. And they opened 14 manufacturing plants in Western Europe and 2 in the United States. And so, as your audience may know, this is relevant because our team of 3,250 doctors and nurses and scientists who volunteered to read through the Pfizer documents and issue 85 reports to date on what's in them has identified the greatest crime against humanity in recorded history, and especially a crime against the next generation, because there's a huge focus in the Pfizer documents on sterilization and ruining women's menstrual health and ruining women's reproductive health, making it impossible for them to nurse their babies and so on. So all of that is to say, what we don't want to look at is that this is a bioweapon. But also the book is about the last 2.5 years and how, you know, half of humanity went along with a two-tier society and nonsensical obeisance to authoritarianism and hating their neighbors and believing things that are not true. So that also is the beast. We have to face what we've been through.
Interesting. Well, you're among friends because I had Bill Gertz on in February 25th of 2020 talking about the Wuhan lab. So we got an early look at it. February 27th, 2 days later, I wrote a bill for Congress saying that Congress could only spend half their money on vaccines. The other half had to be spent on early treatments. March 2nd, we came out and said that there is no pandemic. We've got cures because I had the DDRL study in March. France. And so I was up, and then I got to be friends with Dr. Zelenko, and we actually wrote a bill reforming the FDA. But you've got a fellow crusader out there. Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Judy Mikovits?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Well, because she's here. I invited her to come on the show and join you.
Okay.
Judy, you want to introduce yourself and you guys talk for a minute?
I'm
see if I can talk. Good morning, Naomi. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Dr. Mike?
You don't call me Dr. Mike. It's Judy's fine.
I know. We all call her Judy. Judy's been on like 30 times. We had a special last year. 18 weeks of the world's greatest doctors panel, and Judy and Brian Artis and Jim Thorpe and Ben Marble, a bunch of other people were on. And so she's, no offense, she's the only one who was publicly advocating our bill on vaccine product liability. And one of the questions I have for you, just to kind of get things going, nobody's writing about it. If you're interested, I'd love if you could cover that, because we want to try to convert folks from reporting to doing. And we've got another member of the Do Something Club I'll introduce you to in a bit. Judy's a doer. You're a doer too, but how do we get into this world of citizen legislation? And then I'm turning back over to Judy. Naomi?
Oh, yeah, I can speak to that. I mean, I started my company, Daily Cloud, which is designed to address exactly this, because I was a political consultant, and I saw how citizens are left out of the process of drafting and passing legislation. So you can literally find any state or federal bill on BillCam, which is our legislative database, and you can share it through social media. And now we've added a Facebook competitor called Communities, where you can share a bill to your communities, or you can create communities around a bill. So if you've got, and also we take draft bills, like we're creating one right now for clean elections. We created a vaccine passport draft bill, a five freedoms draft bill that we passed in 33 states. So basically, you give us your draft bill, and we will pass it for you. Essentially, we'll create an awareness campaign around it, and you know, ask people to lobby it on a state level, state by state. Unless it's a federal bill, is it a state bill or a federal bill? Your bill.
We've got both. We've got state, local, and federal. We've got everything. So I want to give you a website real quick. WriteYourLaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, WriteYourLaws.com. My email, so we can talk off the air and not give out your email, is Greg@WriteYourLaws.com. Oh, I am so glad you called, because we need to talk. I think we can do some amazing things.
Yeah,
let's get back to Judy. So Judy, from what Naomi is saying, you guys should be working together too, because, you know, she's got the journalist and you've got the molecular biology end of it. Judy, what do you think?
We actually have been working together. It's just through the ether, because I just listened to her beautiful book every time from the minute it came out. She's come to Godspeak Church here in Thousand Oaks, Ventura area. So just so eloquently spoken. And yes, I recognize that that's not at all my wheelhouse, and just love it, all that she's done since. Just haven't had a chance to connect in person yet. I mean, for real time, but we will. And I just love everything you do, Naomi. And yeah, that's not my wheelhouse, and I don't speak that language. And that's more. And you're so eloquent.
Oh, that's very kind. Well, the beautiful thing about the moment we're in addition to, you know, it's got its share of horrors for sure, is that the in which we find ourselves is driving people from different disciplines to, you know, create conversations and relationships and new institutions that are less corrupt than the ones that are collapsing in front of us. So yes, I look forward to talking more with Judy as well.
I'll get you guys connected. Judy, why don't you give your public email, and that way everybody can have it, and Naomi can get in touch with you directly.
Dr. Judy, DRJUDY @therealdrjudy.com. And my phone number, you want that too?
You're on the air, Judy. I
wouldn't put
Yellow
that
Root
out.
What's that?
My husband's a security guy, and he would say not a good idea.
No, don't. You're on the air, Judy. This is a podcast forever. No. China listens to us. Vietnam, Cuba, they all listen to us. You know, I don't want you to know. Anyway, I'm sorry. Better go with the email.
Exactly. They all know my phone number.
I know
it's
it.
Not a problem. That's all right. I'm good. Yeah. No, absolutely. We're just doing so much, you know, to network and you know, the disciplines. We've always been multidisciplinary at, you know, Fort Detrick. And the only thing I would change about what I heard in the first few minutes was, hey, it's not an it. And it's not Wuhan, and they modeled Wuhan after Fort Detrick, and we started, I think, 1975, 80, when all of this started, right there, Fort Detrick and beyond. You know, Russia, I think if you see our books, Ending Plague, the KGB was in our labs, and I trained them. Japan, China, you name it.
you know, it is and always was Fort Detrick and really the Cancer Institute. It, you know, Fauci's a false flag pool, whatever you want to say. But if you see Ending Plague, the most censored book, then you see what they really don't want you to see. You know, every single shot since 1986 has been mRNA, animal, whether it's animal, monkey, kidney, aborted fetal, and never tested, not once. And that's what I was showing this past, you know, these past few years, all the hydras in everything. It's all in everything. The false flag is that it was just this Moderna. That's just how we get the plasmids. Oh, yeah, the pre-XMRV 1 and 2 and the immaculate recombination like it never happened before when they took me out in 2011. Us out, I guess I should say, the whole lineage.
Yeah.
Let me just hold you up a little bit. All the data.
Yeah, I just want to hold you up in the interest of time because I see another book between you. Naomi, how far back have you been able to trace COVID? Because I'm with Judy on this. This goes back decades. What do you think?
You know, I don't really have an answer for that. I mean, I guess the thing that struck me and my husband both, and he's from an intel background, is when we were sitting in lockdown, quote unquote, in March of 2020. And there was this, like, terrified world announcement about COVID. We looked at each other because we had both read, like, scientific papers about it from November of the previous year. It wasn't new. So that was mystifying. And, of course, I'm familiar with Event 201, which was also 2019. So, and I guess the last thing I would say from my background, not as an epidemiologist, because I'm not one, but as I mentioned from a former, you know, political consultant and as a journalist, is that the way the campaign announcing a pandemic, which, by the way, is a word that was not in organic use, it was coined, as I'm sure your audience knows, the way it was rolled out, and it was rolled out with the same talking points, the same kind of don't kill grandma, you know, messaging in, you know, hundreds of languages around the world at the same time, that's not possible without a lot of planning. So I would definitely say, judging from the media messaging and the way our captured institutions went in lockstep, you know, from CDC to the FDA to Pfizer to the media, that takes a lot of advanced coordination and planning. That's all I know. The Pfizer documents themselves don't reveal kind of the origin of the virus. They reveal horrible things about the vaccine. One of them being, most recently, we found that in May of 2021, the White House knew that there were blood clots and thrombotic thrombocytopenia and heart damage, pericarditis, myocarditis at scale. And instead of coming clean with the American people, they held an emergency communications meeting with Dr. Walensky, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Collins. This was driven by the White House. To cover up and to create a script, which is wholly redacted. One of our lawyers FOIA'd this information. And so, you know, then you have the mandate subsequent to that. So this is so criminal because the White House knew that this was killing people and injuring them severely. And instead of coming clean and pulling it off the market, they doubled down and mandated our frontline workers, our soldiers, our sailors, our pilots, and so on. And the last thing I would say, because Judy brought up plasmids, is another big story our team has broken this past week, building on the work of others, probably including Judy, if I'm not aware of that, forgive me, but certainly including OpenDAET and Josh Gitzkov in Tel Aviv, is that there was a secret trial within a trial in which 252 people were injected with contaminated a completely different formulation than the one they got the EUA for, with fragments of DNA and with E. coli. And those people had 2.4 times the adverse events as the placebo group of about 250 people. And that's the version that they put in arms. The version was 2.4 times the adverse events. It's just unbelievable.
Oh, I think it's very believable because there's a purpose behind it. It was well planned, as Judy says. The thing I find frustrating is that people are so willing to – I don't get to Judy. I want to get a response. But people are so willing to believe. Naomi, have you, in your analysis of this, and this might help Judy as well and all of us activists to try and understand what's going on because it's so clear to us what's happening. But why are people so willing to believe? Why were they so willing to put on a mask? Why were they so willing to social distance? Why were they so willing to put something into their arm that they had no idea what was in it and to scream at people, literally, in public for those that didn't? You know, what happened to our population of, you know, independent, you know, land of the free, home of the brave Americans? It would become the land of the idiots or the gullible. What happened?
Yeah. Judy, do you want to pick that one up? Or?
Yeah, Judy, feel free. That's
a tough one. I don't know. I don't see it. I have absolutely no idea. I was on a trivia team at a meeting the other night, and I'm like, don't pick me for trivia. Anything I know is considered a lie. the only answer I got all night was the Missouri is the show me state because I do data. It's data. It's been there all along. The myocarditis, the pericarditis, you know, the only thing I keep saying, it's not this, it's not it, it's not that virus. We've been constructing them. SARS-CoV-2 was injected in every polio vaccine since 2004, and so was the pandemic strain of flu, of influenza. We know our friend John Cullen, Greg, and that was 2004. They cloned them both. They put them in the cell lines that were in our vaccines, and they injected away. Every polio shot. Why do you think Gates said, oh, everybody go get a polio shot? I don't get it. I just don't get it. Viral myocarditis, whether the virus is synthetic or from nature, has been around. The athletes were dying from the Gardasil shots on the field. This is the big premeditated murder. Doctors, nurses, I'm infected with every synthetic virus from Ebola to you name it, and I'm just fine because it's not the poison. It's the pathway. Our immune system can fix it if we just think all we got to do is no more injections. That's the big thing from Dell Bigtree. What are they afraid of? That we'll walk away from Big Pharma totally and take back our health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Judy, what's your theory about why? Is it just so that we'll all be kind of disabled all the time and dependent on pharmaceutical products? I mean, I personally see it as a geopolitical right now, the last 3 years, as a geopolitical attack, especially because in the Pfizer documents, there's disproportionate harm geopolitically. There's 36,000 adverse events in the United States. The next largest tranche is in Western Europe in order of political importance, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Greece, Spain, and all the 52 countries around the world combined where this was rolled out add up to only 7,000 adverse events.
Correct, and more than geopolitical, cultural. We got to get the blacks. We got to get the military. We got to get the doctors. We're exposed all the time, so we become the most susceptible. We're the canaries in the coal mine, and it's all about liability because when all liability was removed from Big Pharma and placed on HHS in 1986, not a single placebo saline controlled safety study. That's
right.
The big discovery, the proof. Was 18, 19, 17. I've said it over and over again. We all sat in the office of Jason Chaffetz, March 31st, 2017, when he was oversight committee chair. We all sat there, Bobby Kennedy, Dell Bigtree, Riza Islam, Dr. Noam Chandra, Dax Lyons-Weiler, Tony Bark, Michelle Ford, you name it. We were all there on all the vaccines, and we showed them all the data. That right there, and he said he'd do something, and we all know what he did. He quit, and he's liable. Liability for our Congress. When are they gonna admit they participated in these crimes against the American people and humanity?
But can I, like, why? Right? Like, that's a good point.
A disease to affect the economy of nations. Welcome trust. Wellcome Trust, always in it, UK. Who controls the journals? Scientific journals, as Jim Thorpe and I keep, criminal fraud since 2000. Premeditated murder. Cover it all up. Call it something else and move on. There's nothing to see here.
Yeah. Let me just jump in for a second.
Yeah.
Naomi, do you have to leave at the bottom of the hour? Because there's a couple things I want to accomplish.
All right, so
we got to get you back. Let me get your response to that. Then I got to introduce you to one more member of the Do Something Club.
Well, I guess the going back that far, you know, puzzles me, right? I mean, I believe you. And by the way, I also wanted to say to you that there are, if you go to Bill Camp and you look up vaccines, there are some good existing bills that strip immunity from pharmaceutical companies already that reverse the PrEP Act, basically. So I think it's fantastic that you've got a draft bill, but we can get started immediately by passing one of these bills that's already been introduced and sponsored. So going back to what Judy has been saying, it confused, I don't know how to process it because, you know, I'm a political analyst, and so to me, especially with my findings of China, you know, and the White House's involvement, and I believe, of course, this is a White House that's captured by China, Forum, World Health Organization, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all these bad guys that I identified in my last book, The Bodies of Others, and this book, Facing the Beast, as wanting to kill us, basically, especially in the West. I get the current political moment. I get, and Ed Dowd and I have talked about this, that, you know, basically with the scale of injury and death and sterilization that we've seen in the Pfizer documents and that Ed Dowd is independently confirming through his data sets, and the people flooding over the border, and I'm the daughter and granddaughter of immigrants. It's not, you know, I believe in illegal immigration. This is something completely different. Basically, all you, as he put it, all you need to do is wait 5 years, and people who remember what a democracy is and what human rights are will be dead or disabled. And there will be millions of people in Western Europe and North America basically taking the place of the population that has been killed off, right? The people coming over the border are not being compelled to be vaccinated. And they don't remember. You know, many of them come from countries where feudalism and autocracy are absolutely standard. So it's a great way to invade and destroy America and Western Europe without firing a shot and letting time do its work. And, you know, something I really want people to be aware of is that there's been a 13 to 20% drop in live births. Our team and independently Jim Thorpe found the mechanism whereby women's reproductive capacity, and also men's, is being destroyed by these lipid nanoparticles, by the patients in the placenta, by the mRNA in the breast milk, by the lipid nanoparticles accumulating in the ovaries. Horrible, horrible things that are leading to what we're seeing. Like, your audience needs to think, when is the last time you saw a heavily pregnant woman? You know, not a slightly pregnant woman with a tiny belly, but a really, really heavily pregnant woman, full-term baby. Midwives are saying they have to deliver babies 2 months early now because the placentas are so compromised. So this is what we're going to see, like catastrophic drops in live birth. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Institutional memory, the 5 years. We've been 15 years since our discovery base, our paper, our discovery, you know, 2008. We had the cure for this aggressive prostate cancer, 2008. We understand the XMRVs. What's the key? A protein, a peptide called syncytin that every mammal all the way back to lizards, SYNCYTIN, synthesize cells together. It's what holds the fertilized embryo into the uterine cell wall. How we get identical twinning, that's what I am. It's the signaling, it's the hormone, it's syncytin. Humans have it. When you put a ton of animal, aborted fetal, everything else into humans, we've been causing these and following this, call it in vitro fertilization, isn't always has been this march through these shots to change the base pairs, the code, to kill the most, but to make it look like it didn't happen immediately. So the detonate switch comes from somewhere else. But the key peptides, are in the sequences. That's why we clone the different viruses and inject them, the no-see-em of Ralph Barrick. If we really look at the data, and that's why the data was all removed, thank God we got it, from our labs from the five decades. I can show you every single one. We have the cell lines. We have the data. They're in the freezers. They've been there since I was arrested, kidnapped.
Yeah.
I was never arrested. So we're good. We just have to convince people to stop every injection, and we can fix this.
I need to get you both back for an extended, 3-hour show, but I'll work on that a bit. I want to bring on Laura Bartlett, who does ourpatientrights.com, and is another one of the do something folks. I know Judy knows Laura. Laura knows Judy, but Naomi, I don't think you do. So, Laura, you got a minute, and then we got to get back to Naomi's book for closing because she only has a few more minutes. Laura, why don't you go ahead?
Hey, good to be talking to both of you guys. Good to hear from you again, Judy. Nice to meet you, Naomi. And it's nice. It's good to be in good company of people actually doing shit. It's good for people. Can I say that on this radio? I'm not sure.
Well, you do.
But it's just
let's get your website and what the contract is, and then say we got really short on time.
In a nutshell, yeah. I don't want to. I feel like I'm hijacking something really cool here, so I'll get out quick. But, for all this stuff to happen in the last 3 years, you needed the hospitals to be complicit. You needed the doctors in the hospitals to go along to get along. And we've got a document that's novel. It's new. It didn't exist before. And it puts the doctor on notice that if he violates this current consent, not an advance directive, but a current consent document, that he is now choosing to violate your bodily autonomy, and it's intentional toward a battery. So now it's criminal. So regardless of whether or not there's anything that can be done with the PrEP, it doesn't matter. It'd be like walking up to somebody in the hallway and hitting them with a 2x4. This is criminal now. I told you don't, give me a colonoscopy. I'm in here for a broken finger. You gave me a colonoscopy. That's violating my rights. Informed consent. So anyway, the document's at ourpatientrights.com. It's been used effectively for planned surgeries, emergency visits. It turns the culture of that doctor's environment around a 180. Doctors they apologize profusely after they get this document. They act like they had no idea why the police were called on patients and hauled out after they get the document. Investigations are opened as to why the police were called to haul them out. So anyway, it's at ourpatientrights.com.
I'm sorry, I just have to hold you up.
Ahead,
a moment because we've got a minute left. So it's ourpatientrights.com.
Yep,
I'll get your email to Naomi also. Naomi, however much time you have left, let's talk about the book, where to get it. Anything else you want to talk about in the time you have?
Do you order Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith, and Resistance in a New Dark Age on Amazon? I know we have mixed feelings about Amazon, but it's very important, especially because I'm being targeted yet again with one more global smear campaign. It's very important to let the book-selling world know that we won't be silenced and that this message is supported. So please do. And I guess I just want to conclude by saying the book – also, Facing the Beast also explains that I've concluded that material and political standard history can't explain the times we're in and what we're seeing. It's too weird, and it's too aberrant and too synchronized. AI can explain some of it, but overwhelmingly, I've concluded that we are in kind of a biblical time in which there is a spiritual battle going on between good and evil, and that the things we're discussing are kind of manifestations of that. And so in addition to fighting on a material plane, we have to fight on a spiritual plane as well. That's my concluding thought.
Yeah, I'm sorry about the time pressure, but like I say, you're welcome back anytime. And Judy and Laura, you're welcome to stick around too for as much time as you have. We've got plenty of show left since I started so late. Tommy, thank you so much. I'll text you the bills. I'll get you the information. We'll get in touch. I'll get everybody connected, everybody else, and we shall go from there. Thank you, Naomi. We'll.
Thanks.
All right. She had to go. I mean, it would put it right up. She's probably got to call the next interview right now. So, unfortunately, in radio world, they only do 2 minutes or 3 minutes normally, and that's not enough time for me to say hello. And Judy has these amazing molecular biology lessons, which I hate to interrupt, but I sort of have to. otherwise. But you know, anyway, now we got time. Now we got another 2 hours if you want. Go ahead.
And I love to hear Laura more if she has a second or two. But, you know, the reason for the molecular biology lessons is because the wording, you know, I heard it, I listened for it, that Naomi keeps saying, the Pfizer documents. You know, which ones? You want the ones back to HIV/AIDS? Which ones do you want? I got them all in my freezer. Which ones for Merck? You know, I got the samples. You know, I was in Upjohn. This is in our book, Ending Plague. I'm in Upjohn in 1986. I left because of the corruption in Washington. And, you know, I get up there and Upjohn's making a blood product. And they said, oh, we don't have HIV in Michigan, but we got to check it. So they flew me back on their Learjet back and forth every Monday. Why is Upjohn going to the FDA in a Learjet every week? You know, and flying this 25-year-old kid who quit the NCI spot on when I watched them change data, and the boss said, I don't care. And people were committing suicide, the undergraduates, the postdocs, the students, because they weren't going to do that. They couldn't do that. They, you know, read that or listen to that book, more importantly, Ending Plague. You know, listen to the real Anthony Fauci. Listen to Naomi's book. And she answers her previous book with what I was listening to. I'll get Facing the Beast to Johanna and Rich, and we'll get it in, you know, in our bookstores and offline. We're creating new publishing, as you know, Dell Bigtree, The High Wire. They are censoring these things. So the why is just that everybody thinks she's got it. It didn't happen overnight. And Laura's correct. You know, you had to get the buy-in from the doctors. How do you get the buy-in from the doctors who in 1986 were saying, we won't go there, and killed themselves rather than to do that in their research? And it's not the scientist. Science is not medicine. They practice a PhD with a true PhD, not a big pharma commercial, not a clinical study with statistics. There are lies, damn lies, and we don't do consensus science. It's either data or it's not. And this is what the data never lie. So our literature, our papers, you know, 1,000 papers, you know, whoever, Tony Fauci, Peter Murray, they're opinion papers. Their opinion, they're not data. It takes a long time to generate data. If you hear Ending Plague, you know exactly why. We have the cure for AIDS, for neuroAIDS, which they call chronic Lyme disease. It's HIV GP120. Kaiser has to pay for that because of ACT UP. The big why is they're libel right now, and just like Laura's doing, when the doc criminally libel. So is Jason Chaffetz, criminally libel. I want to see that change. You know, Rand Paul, I'm sorry, don't sit there for 20 years and tell us what we've known 20 years ago and you do nothing. We're action radio. We do it.
Amen.
I'm sorry.
Well, I knew it was good to get all three of you together. I just had a feeling. In fact, I didn't think of it till yesterday afternoon. I said, I got to get Judy and Naomi together because I didn't know if you'd communicate it. But you're doing such similar things, but from different angles. You know, she's the political, the investigator. She's the writer. And you're the scientist, the data person. And you just have to combine those two. And I can see you two writing a book easily. You know, so it's going to be interesting.
And we speak different languages. We speak different languages. And my language is lost. That institutional memory of what is true science. This is why we started here, a Substack, because I realized when I heard Joe Latafo that in At God Speak Church, I'm like, uh-oh, he doesn't know. And he's brilliant, but they don't know. And so if we can just reset it back 5 years and we don't have to go back 45, they win.
Well, that's why I asked that question to Naomi, how far back does her knowledge go? Because you go back decades. You know, you go back to AZT and Bactrim and Dr. Fascist, and you know that whole story, and people have forgotten that. But the COVID is just a repeat of AIDS, right, pretty much?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
XMRV. HIV is an XMRV. It's a synthetic virus. Cured that, didn't we? You know, sorry, SARS-CoV-2, every polio vaccine since 2004, and nobody got hurt. And I'm saying this over radio across this entire country like I've done for 2 years. And not one person has ever said, no, you're wrong. We didn't put it in every polio vaccine since 2004. That's why these kids are testing positive, because they're injected and they have no immune system. That's why they drop, because we just created AIDS. Oh, that's why the same thing they did before. Who controls the journals? Oh, peer review, your Institute of Medicine, John Coffney and Lipkin, Tony Fauci, the highest levels. Does anybody know that the entire government, the entire HHS has to sign off on a paper from a principal investigator from the National Cancer Institute? Why does it matter if the EPA or the CDC signs off on that paper? They want you to see that you don't know where the co-poisons are, where the co-pathogens are. A virus is a poison. Lee Merritt's right. Everybody's right. But what they don't see is there's no it. We've got to stop saying it. There's no one virus. Every sequence you change, we all say EBV. Well, we have variants of HIV that are into the hundreds of thousands as we reconstructed there in our labs, no CM method. Who created the manufacturing plants? I did. How do you grow the virus, cripple the immune system? How do you immortalize, transform a cell line? It's all in the book, and the book's a legal document that Ken Edgelager, my lawyer, has been writing. All three books. So all three books. And the FBI, the DOJ, the Ninth Circuit Court have had all of these data since May of 2014. That's when I got out of jail. Oh, because my legal defense, when I couldn't say a word about XMRV, they just changed the name. It's all AIDS, and it's not VAIDS. We're not going to let it go V8. I could have had a V8. No, I got vaccine AIDS, and so did my children, and so did my grandchildren. The why is it takes three generations, Jim Thorpe, and you've got to get it in utero. Our umbilical cord stem cells, when I started in 1980, and it's all in the book, umbilical cord stem cells, we collected them from Frederick Memorial Hospital, took them right to Fort Detrick. They didn't have any genetic changes, MTHFRs, none of that. Those are somatic, meaning they happen from the environment. These are not genetic disease. God did not make oncogenes. There's no such thing, Harold Varmus. That's a cult called scientism. We don't care about your Nobel Prizes. Carla said it in a Substack the other day, and it's like a thank you. No, why are we honoring prizes that are from, the Lasker Award is the American Nobel Prize. Dynamite is the Nobel Prize. Oh, so the guy that does better than dynamite or the sterilization Sanger, David Martin, go back. This is all about insurance. And their insurance liable. We don't have to file lawsuits. We're filing insurance claims. I love the angle. Yeah, now they're criminally liable. No, it is informed consent. We'll do true immunization, not vaccination. That's why I keep saying vaccination is not immunization. It's sterilization and extermination, and it always has been. Always. Since my whole life, I walked into Fort Detrick National Cancer Institute June 10th, 1980, and I saw it all, but I never did it all, and I never complied every single time I walked away. I walked away when I saw them change data in 1986. Said, done. Walked upstairs. The boss, the head, not my boss, not Frank Rossetti. It's in the book, the overboss of the whole biological response modifiers program. Biological response modifiers. What changes our immune system? How does it change it? What's the poison? Oh, we cured AIDS in 1980s. Candace Pert, peptide T, Lyme disease. Peptide T, it's the same peptide. Yeah, that's in GP120. Syncytin, the snake venom peptide that holds a fertilized embryo. Syncytin, into the uterine cell wall. All mammals have it, so we don't lay our eggs and the snakes don't eat them in the soil. Come on, folks. It's not rocket science. It's
coming from you. It is rocket science.
I love
it. The rest of us. Laura, let's get you in on this here because it's your turn. And I'm going to send this to Naomi when we're done. She'll get the podcast and everything. So you guys can leave messages. You can do whatever you want. Laura, what's going on?
Well, it's such an honor to be talking with both of you guys. And Judy, God bless you. Man, giving it to the man way back then. I really appreciate everything you've ever, ever done. Thank you. I'm feeling a slightly above average intelligence just listening to you, but I really appreciate that you got the informed consent thing, that you said that, because the stuff in the hospital would not have flown, which means then the vaccines wouldn't have had a chance really to catch on, because the fear wouldn't be there if people weren't toe tagged and body bagged in hospitals in the last 3 years. And you needed the complicity, you needed the hospital doctors to be complicit and go along to get along and just run roughshod over patients' informed consent. If that did not happen, you wouldn't have had people die, because it really was the protocol that was killing them.
The correct. And do you know Physicians for Informed Consent? Look up PIC. We were Physicians for Informed Consent in 2017, and maybe even a little earlier. And we were showing this with the Gardasil shot. These kids were dropping dead on the football field. They were driving their car 3 months after the shot. All of these data was known by Bobby, Brian Hooker, us. We did, interestingly enough, a study in corruption, a panel discussion where Mike Hugo, who wrote with Barbara Lowe Fisher the compensation program in the 1986 law, you know, for table injuries, 1986, the act.com. We were right there in a study of corruption in Autism One in May of 2016, showing all of this all the way back. Most of that's been censored, but thank God we got that in the last chapter, Plague of Corruption. See, Bobby Kennedy knows this, and he plays it so well. He's brilliant, and I just love him because he follows the law and he listens to you just like you do. So when we can say it clearly, and unfortunately nobody speaks my language, and I'm trying to translate. That's why you're so funny, and I love you, because I use those phrases so that I can. I sit on these shows so I can hear how to say it better. You know, Kent and I write it over and over again. I talk it, and Kent transcribes it into a document, and then he writes it as a sixth grade science teacher in words somebody understands. Oh, and nobody in this country, not one of our doctors, understands sixth grade science. Why did nobody know the base pairs that made up our DNA are the same as the base pairs that made up the DNA of horses with their little ivermectin horse face, or a class of drugs called purinergic modulators? Purines, coffee, caffeine. He doesn't have caffeine. It has theobromine. It's a different purine, but nobody knows how to look at the chemical structure and tell anything. They're all just a bunch of morons. Yeah, and they call themselves physicians.
Judy, it must be infinitely frustrating for you to be a thinker in a world where people have they forgot how to think or question.
Well, fortunately, I've always been in a place where all the thinkers are so much fun. Candace Burt, Luke Montagné, Frank Rossetti. Boy, be in that lab in the 80s. Listen to Ending Plague. I mean, we're talking to the gay guys. I'm the one stuffing the AZT down their face and watching them swallow it, just like they try to do to you in jail when they have to make you swallow your poison. And one guy's beautiful and the other guy's not. And I'm like, come on, what are you doing? And they're like, uh-uh. And I'm like, look, I'm the same kid you are. You're killing us. And I'm saying, just tell me the difference and we'll do it. Oh, cannabis. You know, we demonize marijuana. Why do you see? Watch the commercials on TV all night. You might have to do a few terpenes and a little cannabinoids, but watch them and see the lies they're telling you. I mean, I get to go into my little terpene psychoses and follow them, and it's actually fun because you can see their game and they can't hide it. Because once you say it clearly, they get it, and that's what you're here for.
You just got to find a way to relate to people. That's the idea. I mean, I taught flying, and I made complex subjects understandable. If you ever get my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. So, Judy, if you need a writer, I'm more than happy to take, you know, molecular biology, you know, 808 instead of 101 and translate it into English. I mean, I'll try. I mean, you know, that's kind of what I do. But I like relating simple things and making stories. I'll tell you one of the revelations I had, gee, this probably might be new to you. Everybody's worried about carbon dioxide. And it's you know, they're scared of carbon dioxide as they are of COVID. And carbon dioxide, without carbon dioxide, the plants die and we die. You know, we just had Gregory Wrightstone on recently, and I was talking about this with him, and I came to the conclusion that the internal combustion engine, which runs on hydrocarbons, in other words, hydrogen and carbon, plus oxygen mixed in the carburetor or the fuel injector and burnt, creates energy. Well, it's the same formula as carbohydrates. It's the same carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And so when you tell people that, it's like, what? I said, this is natural. It's natural to have carbon dioxide in the air. It's part of the carbon cycle. It's part of life. So I've never asked you this before, Judy, but do you see the parallels I do? The hydrocarbons that are petroleum, that are gasoline, that goes into our car engine, mixed with oxygen and burns, is almost the identical process to carbohydrates, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, which we burn for energy. Am I onto something here?
Yeah. You correctly are. And if you look at the chemical structure, hemoglobin has a nitrogen scaffold that holds iron, Fe2+ charge. Chlorophyll has the same nitrogen scaffold that holds magnesium. So we catch the ferritin on the way out of the cell with, you know, chlorella, spirulina, milk thistle. That's what cured the AIDS guys. Milk thistle, chlorella, spirulina. It's, I mean, we got the patents for how to fix it with natural products. Yes. And fungisome. And, you know, what's a parasite? Anything that robs oxygen. Is it Tony Fauci? You know, what? Or the mask you put on your face. Watch the high wire from about 3 weeks ago. Now a paper came out in Jeffrey Jackson. This is what I encourage my team to do. They don't have to read my playbook or do it, but if they don't play, I bench them. If they don't do the homework, I bench them on the team. They're still loved. It's just that I can't have you play if you're playing your game. There's no I in team. If you look at that, at the high wire, only 0.02. And in our book, The Case or the Truth Again About the Masks, you know, we breathe in 4%. I mean, we breathe in 0.4% CO2, 0.4%. We exhale when we metabolize those carbohydrates. We did carbohydrate loading and poisoned ourselves where we stretched our mitochondria running a marathon. The exact opposite wrong thing to do. Oh, fat, folks. You know, and so you're exactly right. We breathe out 100 times more CO2 and our plants metabolize it, not our smart cities. And it's all been Joni Mitchell. Paved paradise and put in a parking lot. I'm sorry. Just go back to the old music. I've been listening to her album over and over again in the car just to get some sanity into my world and make it fun. You know, and I was traveling a bit, and I got to stay away just until my skin turns brown and go home to California because I'm not giving up on California.
Well, we make it fun here. We have all kinds of jokes and things going on. I mean, it's constantly, you know, making fun of everybody. And you have to. It's the only way to keep your sanity. But that's a great way to reach people. Is you find that common thing, that emotional, you know, thing that that people can connect to, and it makes perfect sense. It's like getting to that question earlier. Why are people so willing to believe things that will hurt them as opposed to things that will help them? Why, you know, where do we lose our way at? How do we connect with people? Say, you know, like, what are you wearing a mask for? Especially inside your car with the windows up. That's just dumb. It's like common sense, logic, and reason.
Well, no,
we go on logic and reason. Go ahead, Judy.
I think you do what Laura did. No, it's a crime. You're driving drunk. We're going to hold you criminally liable. Nobody should be on an airplane with a mask. And especially not a flight attendant who has to communicate with you the minute the only mask I said, hey, drop it from the ceiling, I'll wear it. You know, and they're like, and beat me up. You know, come on, get a clue. Nobody in the exit row wears a mask. You know, and the flight attendant in Southwest agrees with me. It's illegal. That's how you do it. You are driving drunk, and I will measure your blood levels, and I will prove it.
Perfect.
Well, you know what the do you know the oxygen content of an airplane at cruise altitude? As opposed to sea
no.
level? Because I remember telling you this before. You didn't know that the cabin pressure of an airplane, most people don't unless you're a pilot. I was a flight instructor. And I want to get back into it. I didn't win the lottery, so not this week. Anyway, 15%. It's 15%. Airplanes are pressurized to 8,000 feet. That's 3,000 feet above Denver. They're not pressurized to sea level. So if you're in an 8,000-foot
right.
cabin, you're getting about 15% oxygen as opposed to 22% at sea level. So you've already knocked off, 7% of your available oxygen. You put a mask on, and Judy knows this, how much more does that restrict your oxygen? And then if you have a couple of drinks on top of it, you're going to pass out. Right, Judy?
Right, yeah. Or you drink Diet Coke. The aspartame will take care of that too. They're value shaming you as they're feeding you glyphosate, and you're going to pass out. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Laura, what do you think about when you were talking about your contracts and go to the hospitals and the resistance that you see out there? How is it all based on fear, or is there just a reluctance to believe something good? I think people really want to believe. The climate change is going to kill us. They have this sort of, it's not quite a death wish, but they want to believe the worst as opposed to the best. But, hey, carbon dioxide's great. Go ahead and drive that V8. Go get your Dodge Charger and cruise, across the country. It's good for the environment. You tell people that, that's going to freak them out. So, Laura, what do you think's behind it, the thought process?
I think groupthink is a pretty powerful lever for people. Nobody wants to be different. Maybe it's a self-preservation thing, but everybody kind of went along to get along. Everybody in the last 3 years. I remember standing outside of Home Depot. I just wanted to go in and get my, paintbrush or whatever it was I needed. And
right.
Everybody's standing 6 feet apart. I'm just like, really? Really? I mean, you're going along with this? This is so weird.
Yeah, I would stand next to some babe and say, want a hug? In the 6 foot line, just to be me, but it's weird.
All I can explain is that it's easier for people to, they just want to blend, don't stand out. And you're obviously going to stand out if you question things.
So
I think we've all been kind of indoctrinated by, where our place is in the hierarchy of authority. And I think that, everybody kind of cows down to the whatever the authority figure is that told them this was this and that was that, and don't step out of line, And you just, I think, Judy, I have this theory. I've never wanted to be a preschool teacher or anything like that. That was never, in my ambitions. But I mean, if I were to do education all over again, and people just look at me like, "Are you crazy?" I would almost want to put a bunch of kids in a room as soon as you get them into whatever that school program is, whatever you want to call it, school. You put them in a room and their desks are completely disassembled. And they have to walk in and you don't tell them, go grab your seat in the same place, look forward, everybody put the feet on the ground, everybody do the same thing like robots. I would like them to say, well, what do we do? That's great. That's a question. Where do we sit?
Yep.
Another great question. And then they go, but what is all this stuff? Another great question. And I would just let them question until they start picking up the pieces of their desk and start putting them together. Because questioning, or they should, I think education starts with question. But if you've got this indoctrination of never questioning authority, you tamped that down at a very, very young age. And I'm not talking about just be rebel for the sake of rebelling. I'm saying ask some really good questions. And by the way, I kind of ascribe to the idea that there aren't really any wrong questions. I need you to start thinking in questions from the moment you can start talking. And anyway, that's my idea of education anyway, because once you leave it to everybody else to figure that stuff out, the microbiology or why planes fly, those aren't my question. Those are somebody else's questions. You're more susceptible to just kind of falling into groupthink. Somebody else solved it. Somebody else is the expert. Somebody
right.
else will ask those questions.
Right.
And see, that's what a PhD, they ask questions. In our book, we talk about the day I got hired, and it's in Ending Plague, and it was a very interesting interview with Frank Rossetti. But at the end of the day, he goes to the hiring manager at the contract. That's the other thing Ronald Reagan did, made us all contract research. We were hired guns. We couldn't say anything to the authority. We did what we were told. I usually threw the notebook at them, told them where they could go, and had to go find another job because, you know, but at the end of the interview, she said, you can't hire her. And he said, why not? And he said, she asked too many questions. And he threw up his hands, if you've ever seen Frank Rossetti, and screamed, she's a scientist. She's supposed to ask questions. And that started... That started a beautiful 40 years where we questioned each other, and people would see us outside these scientist meetings, and you know, and I wear blue collar, so we talk that way. So we, you know, no, that data, those data don't say that. Those data don't say that. You know, and he'd like prove it, and we'd prove it. Read the book. That's how science advances. When you aren't afraid to ask that question, when you're like,
yes,
that doesn't make sense, and somebody listens to you. That's the fun of relationships in the last few years, where somebody comes like Naomi from a completely different viewpoint, and then she hears something and she's like, well, yeah, maybe I won't attack her. Maybe I'll attack, you know, we're attacking people. You know, oh, she's this. She's a virologist. Does she? No, I'm not. You know, I don't care what you say I am. And see, I was trained by my mom, and she beat the tar out of me if I let somebody stand there and get bullied. You know, and she answered only to God, and we answer to our parents. It's you know, the fifth commandment: honor thy mother and my father.
Right.
You know, and how we were raised. You do that. You know, you get bullied. My mom marched into eighth grade and said, why did she get a zero on this math test if all the answers are right, to the teacher? And the teacher said, I couldn't read her handwriting. It's a science class. And I guarantee you I got an A on that test. But I went home and I learned how to write because my mom made me write on that blackboard. Never give them a reason to take you down, the Cherokees. Never, never, never. She's brutal, but good.
Yeah. What an awesome lady.
Do you have any recordings?
More of them.
I'd love to play. Yeah, that would be fascinating. But I want to get back to Laura's point on education because I was thinking along similar lines. That it really starts with education, which is really diseducation. It's really indoctrination. And the first thing they do is to tell you to stop asking questions. Listen to the lecture. Repeat the lecture. Regurgitate the information. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to be fascinated but the choice was given in school all the time. You can do a research paper, you can read other people's opinions, or you can make up your own. I always, always made up my own, my own analysis. And like every other kid, except maybe one or two exceptions, would do the research. They'd get other people's quotes. They didn't value their own judgment. That has to be taken out of you early. So,
and you know
really
what's going on right now? You know
what's going on
since the 70s? Who, you know, when people send in these grants, or these so-called peer review papers, you send them in, and the boss, Bob Gallo, is in Ending Plague. Who wants to reject Rossetti today? And then they take the work and they make it their own, and it's fraud. You know, and then you share the Nobel Prize, David Baltimore. He didn't do the work. Read the paper. It doesn't happen that way. Oh, okay, fine. Is he going to come after me? No, he's not, because he knows I'm right, and the data's all in the book and in the freezer, locked away with the Ninth Circuit Court. Yeah, since 2014, folks. All the proof of all of the fraud in the medical literature for 40 years is right there. Since 1992, we cured AIDS then, and they had to do their game. They couldn't have the good guys, couldn't have them go according to God. Yeah, who wants to reject? So this so-called peer review, not peer review. Frank Rossetti said, I have no peers. And he's right. He discovered everything. And all they did, who wants to reject the grant? Who gets to decide? That's where Fauci got all the money, because you don't do it their way and they don't fund it. You ask a question you don't know the answer to, or they don't know the answer to, and they say you're crazy. And I throw the paper in the desk drawer and say, I don't care. and just keep working. I don't care about publications. Oh, 1,000 publications. That just means you're stupid because you had somebody else's work because you can't possibly write that many papers. And so it's just about you and your opinion. It's not data. You can't do it that fast. That's the problem.
I have a theory. Looking at how society, okay, what do you think about this theory as far as like impacting culture and just the how people value, well, we know that people value status and position, right? And so academia kind of supports that, but in a bigger way, the catch-all is the pop culture. Right? If you can influence people into believing that the people who get a little statue, awards, what do we do every year? We do the Academy Awards. We do the Emmy Awards. We do the Globe Awards. We do the SAG Awards. Things that touch just about every demographic, every race, socioeconomic group is these awards. These every year, it happens every year at the same time. Everybody's glued to it. Everybody believes that that's a big old deal, and we should watch the red carpet and see what everybody's wearing. It's so ingrained into everybody's consciousness that being awarded something arbitrarily, I mean, it can be ridiculous. It's just a little.
Well, and isn't that what was brilliant about Mickey's The Great Awakening?
Right.
And your brother was there. They did a red carpet, an award, just like the others, so that the people could hear, see, I call it the heroes of the faith, the people that came mm-hmm. before in this game. And they weren't in the movie, and they didn't have anything to do with this, but we built on somebody else's shoulders. That's data. That's what we do. There's no I in team.
Right. But I think that's what people, you know, that's why they just easily give in to whatever the, you know, the awarded thing is, you know, the thing that was christened, the publication, the study, the, you know, Nobel Peace Prize or the, you know, whatever it is, we just kind of go, oh, okay, it's one of those, and obviously that's right, that's true, you're the authority. But it's a bigger thing that I'm trying to, I guess, touch on. What do you think about that, Greg?
Yeah.
Well, I think that the rewards mean approval. In other words, it's conditioning. You do the right thing, you get
yeah.
the award. Why?
Conditioning.
Why do certain people get the Academy Awards? You know, why does Spielberg not get the Academy Awards? Well, he's controversial. So if you're controversial, you don't get the awards. Why does Dr. Fascist get all the public attention, even though he's a mass murderer? Because he's doing what's approved. You know, why are we censored? Because we do what's not approved. We believe in freedom, real freedom. You know, we have a radio show here where anybody can write a bill. You know, that's dangerous yeah. to the deep state. You know, that's why we're censored here. So it's go ahead, Judy.
Oh, and back to Laura and the kids. Now everybody gets a trophy for playing baseball. You didn't win, and nobody got a participation trophy, and it's just a little bit littler so you don't cry.
Well,
yeah, that
I don't want to play that game.
Well, let me change the subject a little bit here. Okay. When we had Naomi on, what's interesting about Naomi, she reminds me of a guest I had back on WBY about 6 years ago, Ken Stern, who was the CEO of National Public Radio, as we call it, National Socialist Government Radio here. And he spent a year with Republicans, and he went, you know, pig hunting, and he ate barbecue and watched NASCAR. And all of a sudden he realized conservatives, oh, my God, they're like real people too, because all he'd done is surround himself with liberals. And the very, you know, demanding, you know, you better follow the, you know, you better be part of the cult liberal or we're not going to talk to you anymore. Naomi Wolf went through something very similar. So now we got two very intelligent people, very high up in liberal world, who have realized that this isn't it. These people make no sense. This is a cult. These people are dangerous. They're not questioning. They're not looking at anything. They're just following the line. And unfortunately, they've got, you know, several million followers in this country. That's why they're allowing a stolen government to sit in Washington right now, run by a complete idiot and Obama behind the scenes. But what is it about a Naomi Wolf or a Ken Stern or some of these folks, you know, that allows them to at least question and get out of that? And how do we reach millions more people, you know, to say you don't need a vaccine. Big Pharma is here to kill you and make money off you. They don't care if you live or not. They have no liability, and we can fix that with a simple bill. We change three words in two places. It's over. The liability is back. You know, but certain people have left. They've left the cult. They've gotten away from the, you know, from the Moonies or whatever the cult might be, Jim Jones, that kind of stuff. It's not that different in politics. I see it as very similar. So what is it about these people? Can we identify something in a Ken Stern, in a Naomi Wolf, that says that we recognize that they're thinking? And not only are they thinking, they're questioning, and they're saying, you know what? And then they're rejecting. They're rejecting, you know, everything that that they've been taught and conditioned and indoctrinated with, and then they've got the courage to change. I think that's incredible. I just wish you could reach more people. What do you think?
I think there's some of the ego. There's a little bit of damage to the ego because you're so emotionally vested in that, you know, cognitive dissonance that it's really hard for people to say, maybe I was wrong, you know?
Yeah. You know, I admit I'm wrong at least three times a show. You know, I don't care. I'd rather have the right answer. Judy will tell me if I screw something up. She's like, well, Greg, you're not quite right. Here's the way it is. I was like, thank you, Judy. You know, and that's okay. I don't care. I'd rather have the right information. I don't have an ego in this. You know, it's not called the Greg Penglis Show. It's called Action Radio for a reason, because it's not, I invest in this because of the cause of freedom. But someone like, if you study Naomi Wolf, I mean, she was like an ardent feminist, liberal, New York Times author. And then all of a sudden, you know, 3 years of COVID, she's like, wait a minute, everything I was told was a lie. So she gets it.
Right. Yeah. And in the doctor world, that's Christiane Northrup. So now we're all the same. So she lived that with, you know, the women's. You know, and I love her because she's like, no, you know, Matt, all these testing and things, you know, she's great with her tatas, just saying. But, you know, we believe something, and she hopped over and told everybody, but when you say it funny, it's like, yeah, we all go get mammograms. Why am I going to let somebody mash my tatas? No, my husband's good at tatas.
Right.
You know,
you first, dude.
You know. No, I've never done a self-test. You go to the doctor. No, I don't do that. My husband does that. He'll let me know. We're good. You know, stop. You know?
I'll tell you what. If they ever tested for testicular cancer the way they do mammograms, I guarantee you it would not happen. Guarantee it.
Exactly.
Turn your head and cough.
That was a joke.
But I have to hop off here and talk to Johanna. We'll get those books in the store.
Well, thank you for all your time, Judy, and I'll get you connected with Naomi, and I'll give her your email and our bills, and I see big things happening. This is wonderful. I'm really glad
and
that we're able to.
And I'll get Laura's ourpatientright.com and that important thing on our website, so Laura, connect with me as well, because we'll get that to Benoit, and we'll get it out there.
Awesome.
There we go.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Laura.
Love you guys.
Wow, this is so much fun. So, Laura, did you ever expect you'd have like an hour with Judy Mikovits and then talk to Naomi Wolf? And all?
No.
This happened to
you. Are you kidding? Yeah, the creator of the wine condom? No.
Well,
you know, I made the wine condom.
Because I'm curious about it. Of course, I have my own humor about that. I mean, do you only use them once? Do they prevent premature fermentation? I mean, tell me about what are wine condoms?
Yeah, see, that's a perfect example of thinking outside the box, you know, not accepting that, oh, you only seal a reopened bottle of wine the same way. Everybody's been doing it for how many centuries the same way. Mm. And to say, you know, why doesn't somebody seal it from the outside? Why can't we do that? Is there some sort of law permitting that? Is there some sort of
I don't know, cork is kind
of
cool. Have you ever seen a cork
no,
tree? The cork trees are kind of cool. They actually whiskey like cork, which is what it comes from. So I think there's a tradition with it. You know, what else can you see? I think cork is like magical because it's self-sealed. You can put in your twisty screw thing, and then when you take it out again, the cork seals around. It actually makes an airtight seal, as far as I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you beat cork?
But, you know, it's just thinking a little bit different. You know how that whole idea came about was the cork was lost. Or if the cork was broken, but in our case, the cork, my friend who was having a bottle of wine with me over dinner, you know, my neighbor had said, you know, I lost the cork, but we're not going to drink this. Why don't you go ahead and take it home? Because I live next door. And so just to get from her house to my house, she sealed it with Saran wrap and a rubber band. And I thought it was hilarious. You know, cause, and I'm like, wait a second. Wait a second. Why don't people do that? That would be hilarious to have a wine condom. And so, anyway, that's how that happened. But, again, it's just thinking, asking questions, thinking a little differently, not accepting the status quo. And I think that's how things – that's how all great inventions happen. It's just thinking about something in a different way.
Oh, I mean, Action Radio was created for bike rides. Did I ever tell you the Action Radio story, how I thought of this thing?
Uh-uh.
I mean, it literally happened in about 15 seconds of internal dialogue. I'm bike riding. This is back when I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. Beautiful day. It's January 2014. And I remember it clear as day. The Pelicans were diving in. We had a herring run as we get every year. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to be the world's greatest talk show host because my airline career hadn't worked out. And I'm thinking, I want to do something different. And I'm thinking about, you know, talk radio. I'm thinking, you know, the problem with talk radio is all they do is talk. They never take any action. And I thought, what we really need is Action Radio. And I went, oh, my God.
There you go.
You know, I mean, it literally happened that fast. And I stopped my bike and looked up and I said, oh, wow, Action Radio.
Love it.
I got to do something with this. That's how it happened. Mm-hmm. It literally was that fast.
I love
and
it.
From there, now I'm talking to you and Judy Mikovits and Naomi Wolf on the same phone call, you know, and we got Josie from earlier. She's still listening in. Pianki just joined live chat, you know, and so live chat's where anybody can type in anywhere in the world. We've got listeners all over. Now, most of them are on podcasts, but we have listeners in Cuba, in Vietnam, in Indonesia, in South Korea, in Iceland, in Chile. You know, we have listeners all over the place. It's really fascinating.
I love
and they all have a common belief. And they all have a common belief in freedom. Everybody wants freedom, you know, but everybody has a controlling government to a greater or lesser degree, you know.
Yeah.
And so the constant battle is between the individual who wants freedom and the government who wants control. Anybody that wants a government job should be disqualified. Anyway, but that's
right.
How
you
I thought of this.
You know what?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know what I wanted
We're
to say, and I didn't get to say it just because, you know, for brevity's sake, everybody had a window of time they had. But
oh, yeah,
I wanted
an hour
to,
now. An hour,
I wanted
20 minutes.
To,
you can
yeah.
rant all
so
you
the
want.
Whole thing
yeah,
about
go.
Empowering the patient in hospital starts with them believing that they have permission to question the quote-unquote authority, the white coat lab doctor, you know, that's going to walk in and tell you this is what you're going to get. And
why wouldn't you question the doctor? Why? Where did this come from? Because I grew up in a dysfunctional family. I never trusted anybody, any adult, so I questioned all of them. Doctors were no different to me. Why are they different?
The thing is that there's this perception. I think that there's also a bigger thing. I always look at the bigger picture, which is, why are there so many, culture? Downstream from culture, I feel like a lot of these ideas have just been massively adopted, like that the doctor just knows best, the doctor has your best interest at heart. Well, where have we seen that before? We saw that over and over and over again with programs dating back to Marcus Welby, MD. And then we got, Grey's Anatomy and Chicago's Hope and all ER and all the
emergency.
It's because they told you that's what the doctor's thinking. That's what the doctor's motivation is. The doctor goes home and he wrings his hands and then he worries over dinner with his wife about that hard case of COVID. You know, that's what you're supposed to believe, that they're
the
doing that. They're bringing
lives.
Their, yeah, the patient always lives. They have these. These round tables, think tanks in the hospital where they all get together and they look across a boardroom table and they discuss this really tough case. We'll call it COVID. And they just all throw out great ideas and question it and they finally solve it. That's not the way it really works.
Okay,
and,
how does it really work? Let's talk reality. How does it really work?
Well, the reality is what I saw in the last 3 years with my hospital hostage hotline, which is a national hotline number, an 888 number that anybody can call from anywhere in the United
What's
States.
What's the number? Might as well give
it's
it.
888, it's 888-219-3637. And they can be connected to somebody who maybe will ask some questions, will give you your rights, you know, remind you of your rights. You already had them, but a lot of people didn't even know they had patient rights to be able to fire their doctor, to be able to fire as many doctors as they want in the hospital. The hospital has to provide you one. you fire this one because he's being obnoxious and not giving you the risk and benefits of anything he's suggesting, which is informed consent, telling you the risks, benefits, and alternatives before he administers it. Fire that doctor. They have a duty to make sure that you understand the risk and benefits of everything. And then if the next one comes in and does the same thing, fire that one. You have the right. The hospital has to provide you a doctor. Don't worry about running out of doctors. But anyway.
Yeah, I had to do that. That when I was in heart surgery and I was recovering and I had a nurse that couldn't draw blood if her life depended on it, I would have been dead, you know, just from that. And I said, I would never want this person coming back to my room. She's incompetent. I said, bring it. And it was mm-hmm. Bring me the one who did it previously. She knows exactly what she's doing. And so I did that and it worked out. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Right. So, you know, just the thing is the patient felt so powerless, I think, during the whole COVID thing because they really believed they really didn't have any right to actually question the mighty doctor who went to 8 years of school. You know, and they'll remind you of that too, because I've talked to these doctors who were very arrogant and they'd ask me, who is this? You know, when the family would let me on to calls with the doctor, I'd say, put the phone mm-hmm. up next to the doctor's mouth so I can hear him. And and they'd introduce me and they'd say, well, are you a doctor? No. Are you in healthcare? No, but I have a right to ask some questions, and I'd ask them some questions on behalf of the family because they're so emotionally distraught, and maybe the question didn't occur to them to ask it. And so I would ask these questions, and the doctor, in many cases, could be persuaded to actually have an open mind and consider that the patient has a right to request things. That doesn't mean they automatically honor it and give a medication that the patient's asking for. But in the case of COVID, they would request budesonide and they would say, I don't consent anymore. I didn't know better. I don't want this or this. For instance, like remdesivir, maybe they didn't know at the time because the doctor didn't do his duty to inform consent and tell them the risk that remdesivir was a failed Ebola drug that they repurposed for COVID. And that over 50% of the people who got it died during the trials. They didn't tell you that. They didn't tell you that it has the risk.
That?
It runs the risk of,
of
renal failure. They didn't tell you that. They didn't tell you that it could lead to multi-organ failure. That would be truthful to tell you the risk. So, you know, during the silver lining is, as Dr. Mercola eloquently put it, was that people are starting to question things and adoption of vaccines has fallen during COVID. So that's
really?
The silver lining. So the second silver lining.
That's
yeah,
good.
All vaccines. The second silver lining, he said, is your work, your document at Our Patient Rights. That's the second silver lining that came out of COVID, was that patients can be empowered when they walk in and hold that doctor accountable from the moment they form that relationship, that these are absolutely the things you will not do to me in writing. And that doctor has to honor it. If he's foolish and he's just a psychopath, which, hey, I'm up to the possibility there's a few of those running around. They
well,
will have, as Dr. McCullough said, Dr. Jekyll. There's a lot of Dr. Jekylls running around in hospitals, and yeah, they might violate it, but you know what they would be faced with are severe consequences of a 7 or 8 figure judgment when it's, when that thing is done to that person, when they told you in a contract, this is absolutely, you don't give me remdesivir and then you have it notarized, you deliver it in a very specific way, which will be talking about in our upcoming webinars, where you can go to Our Patient Rights and see the information there, and you can pre-register for our webinars to go over how to use this document most effectively, which is just a revision of the document and process that the Jehovah's Witnesses have been using for decades. And guess what? They're the only group of people that we found that did not have their informed consent violated when it came to blood transfusions. They will not get a blood transfusion during COVID, even if it would save their lives, because their religious and spiritual belief prohibits that. So
And it may not stay quiet. You know, it's like saying we have
to
do
it. It may or may not.
But you don't know that.
It may or may not. But, yeah, we don't. But what I'm saying is in the assessment from the doctor and the nurse's point of view, there are cases where, say, they're in a multi-collision car wreck and they're bleeding out and they need a blood transfusion, right? Even in the cases where a blood transfusion may have saved their life, the hospital can't say, nope, you just don't know what you're talking about. You don't understand bleeding complications. You didn't go to medical school. You're getting it anyway. No, they didn't do that. So we saw that group that was able to get their informed consent respected, and we said, ha ha, light bulb moment. If they can get their rights respected in the respect to informed consent and not have things forced on them like remdesivir in the case of everybody during COVID, then how did that work? Reversed engineered it, created our own document that is a revision of their process, and it's a strategy that is working. Whether you go in for a planned surgery or it's an emergency and you walk into an ER with whatever the case may be, they have to respect it. If they don't, and they're a psychopath and they just want to cause more harm to themselves and you, then the consequences are there will be an immediate board to be investigated. That's stated right at the top of the document. So they're put on notice there, and that usually gets their attention. But they know the deeper thing, which is this is an intentional act against this patient. If it's in writing and it's in your patient records, you've been noticed, then there is the criminal consequence of intentional tort of battery, not malpractice, which is covered with the PrEP, unfortunately, not negligence of, oops, we just made a mistake. We were trying our best and we got confused and we're so busy and we got the files mixed up. And I thought you were Joe in room 101, but actually you're Stan in room 102 and we got your medications. That, it's not that. This is intentional. You know I don't want this. You give it to me anyway. Then, you know, I like to use the analogy of I came in here with a broken finger, literally, that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you gave me a colonoscopy just for whatever shits and giggles. I didn't ask for that. I don't want that. Matter of fact, I didn't just ask for it. Told you with my broken finger. I walk in with my piece of paper saying, whatever you do, don't stick that up my butt. That is, I don't want that colonoscopy. And you do it anyway. You violated me. You know, in any other context, we call that rape.
Yeah.
So I'm here to, you know, with Action Radio, to be a, you know, somebody who is the Do Something Club to stop that behavior in hospitals. And I believe it's going to change the culture. We have an insider a hospital insider that is helping our initiative to change culture and believes that just having 5 of these documents delivered in any given hospital would change the culture of that hospital. That's all it would take, because it would go horizontally out among all the doctors. They would talk amongst themselves. Did you get one of these? Oh, my gosh, we can't keep doing this anymore. Informed consent's a big deal. It's real. It has consequences. And then it'll go vertically all the way up to the medical board. And so it's going to change things if we could just get people to understand it and that they know they have this right. And that's what the webinars are for. We're going to do our first series of webinars that are free. We're not making any money. There is no bait and switch. We literally are doing it just to help people be empowered and practically save their life.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of like a webinar every day. That's kind of how I think of it. You know, this is, we get the information, we get the best people, we get the best information, the newest, latest, you know, thoughts, and let people explore different things. A couple of things came to mind as you were talking. Government protocols. If the hospital says, well, I'm just following orders. You know, this is the government protocol. This is what they tell me to do. You know, and
sounds like Nazi Germany.
Well, exactly. That's why I phrased it that way. But the problem is, that's what's going on. And do you see a lot of that still? Is that what they're saying? And we know they're doing it for money, but doctors have free will. They don't have to follow a government protocol, especially when it goes against their own teachings, beliefs, practice, or evidence. You know, I mean,
they don't.
At what point?
They don't. But these aren't charities. These are profit centers. And imagine,
right,
like, you know, you have a quota at Best Buy, you know, the store Best Buy. I've bought things at Best Buy. This isn't a slam on Best Buy. You go into Best Buy and you're sitting, there's always a salesperson that'll walk up to you and go, can I help you? And you're like, no, I just looking for, you know, this battery charger or whatever. I found it. You know, they are given, what if, let's just, for instance, believe, I don't know how it works in Best Buy, but let's pretend that salesperson has a quota they have to meet of flat screen TVs, right? And even though you came in there and you just wanted something else, they are hard selling you a flat screen TV. Well, if you had a moral objection, this isn't as serious as medicine, but you had a moral objection to getting that person to buy something that they didn't want, they didn't need, and matter of fact, something else that's a lesser price may have taken care of their problem, right? But if you had a moral objection to that, you could say, I'm not doing it. I'll work somewhere else. Well, that's the situation that the doctors are in. They are being incentivized in some way, meaning you get to keep your privileges. You get to stay in good standing. You know, everybody likes you if you stay at this hospital and do the thing, which is push the protocol because it helps our bottom line. We're going to make more money. Well, you could go along to get along and do that and hurt people in the case of remdesivir and these other things. Holding medication that could have helped them leave, not in a body bag. But instead, you decided your job was more important than possibly killing somebody. So I have no love for doctors who just went along to get along just because they wanted an easy life. They wanted it. Let's face it, hospital, being a hospitalist where you don't have to deal with billing, you don't have to deal with wrangling payment out of insurance companies with your own standalone, you know, freestanding hospital practice. You don't have to deal with being a manager of people because you have staff, the light bill, the electric bill, the maintenance of the equipment, all the things of being a independent doctor out there outside the hospital system. It's infinitely harder to exist. It's a pretty sweet gig if you can get it working in a hospital. And so the doctors literally were just going along to get along out of convenience to them. That's why I hold the doctor responsible. I don't even like using the overarching word of hospital. The hospital made them do it. No, they didn't. They may have said,
because still individuals,
we're
going
to punish you, by you're going to lose your privileges.
Yeah.
But go work somewhere else. Man, I was in
bitches
before I killed somebody.
Yeah, if the military did this, it would be called a massacre. Or remember the My Lai incident? Lieutenant Calley killed a bunch of villagers. Well, what's the difference between that and the hospitals killing a bunch of people on remdesivir ventilators? It's no different.
Yeah.
You're still killing people. So,
just cowards.
You know,
there were good doctors who left, and they – good job. Now, I don't know if we should give them a medal of honor just because you didn't kill somebody. I mean, I day I choose not to drive my car into somebody who's crossing the crosswalk, you know, and I don't get an award for that. We need to, you know, first of all, the celebrity worship of certain professions, certain people within a profession like doctors needs to go away. This is what led a lot of people like lambs to slaughter in the hospitals by not even questioning them. So that needs to go away. But this will all fall away if patients know about their right to hold that doctor accountable, because none of this could have happened if the doctor felt more pain. He has a choice, a fork in the road, more pain hurting this person against their wishes, you know, once this document's handed to them, versus the pain of losing a job. Could have saved so many lives. Because Dr. Mercola said that it would have circumvented, these are his words, circumvented it, the pandemic.
Oh, listen, freedom would have circumvented the pandemic. I wrote an article not too long ago on my Substack column that the cure for COVID was freedom. Freedom of information. Mm-hmm. If we had free information, if we had, you know, if Dr. Zelenko had a national talk show for a while and said, hey, I got the cure for the COVID. It's hydroxychloroquine. You know, I mean, anyway, he's not that bad, but anyway, he was great. You know, I had him on the show a couple times. But you know, information, freedom of information, if people were free to learn about, and this was something I was going to ask Naomi about if she was on longer, that hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, how many times have I said on that on the show? Since March 2nd of 2020, we had the right answer. We were right. We knew we were right. We kept saying we were right. And I had liberal callers, you know, you're not a doctor. I said, well, yeah, but I can read the same studies they do. He said, yeah. And of course, the classic line is, you know, I'm not a meteorologist, but I know when it's raining. You know, I'm not stupid.
Right.
You know, so you know, any of those things. But the idea of the cult of the expert. And then of course, when someone said, well, you're not a doctor, I said, well, the doctors you know, are they telling the truth? Well, I assume so. Well, how do you know? If you don't have a brain to look into it, then you'll never know. And doctors lie, and experts lie, and people do things for selfish reasons because they're people. So the fact that somebody has the degree behind their name, you know, I say this all the time on the show, I am uniquely unqualified for everything I do here. I am. I don't have a law degree. I don't have a PhD in economics. I don't have a broadcast degree, communications degree. I don't even have an English degree. You know, I just do this.
Well, you're not controlled then.
Exactly.
There's literally no leverage to keep you from free thinking and forming an opinion that goes against the narrative. These doctors felt like they had something to lose. They did. You know, by doing the right thing, you might have lost your job. Big whoop. Go live under a bridge if it keeps somebody alive. I mean, that would be my choice. I've been doing what I've been doing for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, this document is far-reaching than just COVID, by the way, because people go to the hospital for appropriate reasons. Car wrecks, heart attacks, stroke. These are appropriate reasons to go to a hospital. Hospitals have diagnostic tools that you won't find in urgent care, that you won't find at home with your first aid kit. There's reasons why, appropriate reasons to go to a hospital. These reasons will still exist far past COVID, when COVID's just a distant memory. That's why people need to start adopting this contract with a doctor, because that's still going to be there. That doctor's still going to be there, even with a stroke, even with a appendicitis, whatever the reason is that brings them there. That doctor's going to need to be held accountable for your wishes. And there's no stronger way than putting it in writing. We don't do business deals purely on a handshake. There's usually some follow-up paperwork, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We do wills that way. We do everything else that way. It's just that it has been really discouraged until you're, you know, doing anything in writing, until you're at the end stage of life in a hospital, which is called an advanced directive. It's after you're already incapacitated. Well, heck, I'd like my rights respected before I'm on a ventilator. Thank you very much.
So,
and that's what this document does. And it's going to be appropriate from now till infinity and beyond, as Mr. Lightyear used to say. This is appropriate for every case, not just COVID. It's for everything. Hold that doctor accountable. So, you know, no funny business when I'm having my appendix removed. You don't do anything else to me while you're in there. I know people who went in for having, a piece of their colon removed. And while the doctor justified, while I was in there, I went ahead and did this too. Nope. That's not what we're doing anymore. With this document, I'm telling you, I absolutely just want this, and I don't want that, and I don't want this drug, and I don't want that drug, just because it pays more. You're absolutely not doing these things to me. And once it's in writing and served in a very specific legal way that we'll teach you about at our patient rights, it holds them to account, and I'm telling you, it changes the situation drastically in favor of the patient, where their rights are respected. They're not just a lab animal. They're not just a dollar sign to the doctor.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions on that. So for people, how do you far in advance do you do this? Can you write a general contract saying you have to talk to me about everything? How does it work exactly? So for folks that have
never... There's already a template done. Okay. We've done all the heavy lifting. because
right.
there are certain things that obviously would be good ideas, like telling the doctor on the contract that you will tell me the risk and benefits and all reasonable alternatives to every treatment, drug, mm-hmm. or intervention. Okay, so that puts them on notice right at the top. And then there's things that are pretty good ideas, like don't give me remdesivir if I don't want remdesivir. Don't give me a COVID vaccine while I'm in there. I can get one at CVS any other day of the week. Why are you doing it here? It has nothing to
that
do with my toenail
yeah.
fungus, right? Okay, so they just want to make money. And so you're putting them, so the template has options like that. It even has an option that was adopted from an idea that Dr. Mercola said, you know, it'd be a great idea if people actually left the hospital healthier than when they came in. Wouldn't that be great? And I said, that would be great. He says, then why are they feeding them crap like seed oils and that on there? I said, well, that's a great idea. So we added that, you know, in the event that you can't provide something that doesn't contain these things that are bad for healing, that prohibit healing and actually make you sick, then I will have a family member or a friend bring something that is nourishing. So that's an option. So they won't be just shoving crap in front of you as you're trying to heal. So, I mean, it covers soup to nuts, all the ideas, and it's a template. So, you know, I know that people are really motivated by money, but we did not trademark. We did not copyright this. It's a template. So anybody can change it. Anybody can share it. We hope it's shared. We hope people adopt it. We want change, and we want people protected. I've gone through enough scenarios in the last couple of years of the hotline where I get calls in the middle of the night, and people are feeling powerless that the doctor's telling them that you will get this, and you will, you know, they're not saying you'll like it, but you're going to get this, and that's just the way it is, right? And they feel powerless, and I've stopped.
Oh.
I want patients to know that their bodily autonomy matters and that nobody gets to just walk up to me and throw me on the ground and rape me in a parking lot. That's called criminal, right? That's criminal battery. That's rape. But doctors are essentially, in my opinion, doing the same thing. You're there. You're separated from your family. Nobody's going to see it. It's my word against yours because I control the record of what happened while you're behind those walls. You might as well get a jump on that. And you go ahead and tell them when you walk into the hospital. So you're saying how much in advance. You get the template, you prepare it well in advance, just like you would a will, but you don't use a will until a specific time, right? You don't just go, here's my
yeah.
will, let's do it. No, it's only when you're dead. That's when that becomes effective. This becomes effective when there's an emergency situation or a planned surgery. And whatever hospital in America that you happen to be at, not necessarily the one across the street, because you might be on vacation, you might be relocated after you've already prepared this document and had it notarized, proving that that's you who signed it, which holds up way better than you just scribbling your name on it. Have it notarized, your signature notarized. You have it prepared. You make copies of it. You keep the original in a safe place. And you take a picture of it with your phone so you have a digital copy. You go ahead and send it to a few friends in an email, right, and say, hey, this is what this is. We're going to have a conversation about this in the event mm-hmm. that I'm in the hospital. And I call you or text you and say, hey, you remember that document that I gave you? Deliver it. That's when it's delivered a very specific way, certified mail, return receipt requested to the hospital, CEO, or the house supervisor. We try the CEO, but not always are the CEOs in the location of that hospital. So they're very squirrely. We've tried to game every possible resistance. But in the event that they're not in that location, which you don't even need to know the CEO's name, you just have it sent to the title of the CEO, and it'll get there. If someone will sign for it, that's your receipt that they got it. And you're on the hook now, buddy, for when I said, don't give me a colonoscopy while I'm in here. I'm in here for a broken finger, and you do it anyway? Oh, boy, is there going to be serious consequences.
Yeah.
You just
See, that was
violated
my
informed consent.
Yeah, I had one of those, the colon checks, because I'm at that age. And that was my biggest fear, was that they were going to give me a COVID shot while I was out. And so I even asked them about that.
See, so that's on that form. And it'll be on your medical record if you go, but what if they just slyly do it? And no, they want to get paid. So there will be a note that will be mentioned in your electronic medical record. Another thing to do, Greg, is anytime, everybody listening, if you're going to the hospital for any reason, you get access to that electronic medical record ASAP. Because I'm telling you, people were told one thing by the doctor, and actually what was happening to them was completely different. Different drugs, different amounts. And they found out in one case the patient was given fentanyl every 30 minutes. And the wife was like, he didn't even take Tylenol. He would never have asked for that. That mm-hmm. would never have been his request. He would absolutely put his foot down and say no. He had double knee surgery and didn't even take Tylenol for it. So I'm telling you that you have to keep them accountable. You have to go in there and see if they're lying to you, because Dr. Wallach said it best, don't lie. Well, during COVID, I found that to be very true. I've been lied up and down to my face. I heard a doctor, I held him to ask this doctor, how successful are your rates of success for remdesivir? The doctor straight up lied to me over the phone and said 90%. I'm thinking 90% killing them. That's not what I was asking.
Yeah, exactly.
I was asking, what's your success? He knew what I was asking. Here.
My webmaster was killed. Eric Ollie was killed in a hospital with remdesivir and a ventilator. So I know, and that's just one person.
So that was just a straight-up lie.
Yeah, that happened millions of times.
So do doctors lie?
Well, we
all
knew it. Yeah, they do.
Yes, but they do it. Yep. But there's incentive. They're incentivized to lie, because these protocols that were rolled out during COVID had significant amounts of money behind them for the hospital, the people that pay them. So, you know, follow the money. But the main thing for people to know is you can stop somebody from doing something to you, kind of like having if they're put on notice, kind of like having somebody trespass on your property or shoplift, right? There's always a notice that says, you know, shoplifters will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And there are, by the way, you are, Smile, you're on hidden camera. Why do they do that? Because it's a deterrent. And if we want to influence the person who has the ability to order a drug from a pharmacy and then tell a nurse to put it in your arm, which is the doctor, that's how you put them on notice. You let them know that you're on notice. You will be reported to the state medical board. These are my intentional wishes. And there's an extra added layer here that's different than any other document. We added the component of it's my religious and spiritual beliefs. Why did we do that? Because the Jehovah's Witness have been doing it for decades, and it's the reason they don't get something if they don't want something. It's based on their religious and spiritual beliefs. So we added that to the document. It's threefold. It's in writing, notarized in writing. It has your religious and spiritual beliefs built in, right? And it's delivered a very specific way that is legal. So it gets into the electronic medical record per the AMA 2.1.1. So once they receive it has to be put into the electronic medical record when it's in writing. And so that's how we've gained it all out, and it works.
Yeah, I think for folks that know they're going to the hospital, like when I had heart surgery 7 years ago, this would have been a great thing then. But medicine was different then. You know, they actually listened to me when I didn't want painkillers. They didn't force them on me. They didn't sneak them to me in the middle of the night. I would have known. Hydrocodones and opiate. You know, I would have known. I took one whole one time and thought I could fly down the hallway. These drugs are very powerful. When I get a drug that puts me out for like a colon check or something like that, I'm out in seconds. Literally, you know, like one, right. like two, one, two, because I don't take drugs, you know. But I'd be curious if one of the problems that happened to me after heart surgery, and this is where I almost died, was that my chest filled with fluid and they pumped out 4.5 liters. Of fluid. And this is, I believe it was the blood thinners, warfarin in particular. And they gave them to me, you know, after heart surgery. And this is when I was a little more naive. And I said, why do I need these? Well, you might get a stroke if we don't give this to you. I'm like, oh, well, that seems to make sense. And then afterwards I said, let's go into this a little bit more. I said, why did you give me those blood thinners? Well, because of the stroke. Yeah, I heard that. But why do you think I would have a stroke? Well, those happen to people with inactivity. I said, I'm the most active person you've ever had on this hospital ward. I was up flirting with the nurses 2 hours after surgery. You know, that's not me. I said, I'm never taking these things again. And I never have. And even after they pumped all this stuff out of my my chest, which I did recover obviously from, they still want to put me back on them again because that's their protocol. And so you can't question it. But I didn't know as much then. But in those days, this is 2016, but I was still able to refuse things. I mean, I was able to ask questions of the surgeon before surgery. I got five opinions, including the head of Stanford Med Cardiology, whether I should do this or not, to have, a mitral valve trim, a nice little fit, which actually worked out really well. But I mean, I asked everybody. And that's just that's just me. But I know people aren't doing that. They have go ahead.
I was going to say, not just ask, do you think this is appropriate? This is the extent that I saw across the board, the pattern during the last 3 years, right? But it's been happening before this, by the way. It's just this shone a spotlight on it, that the way doctors were doling out informed consent was, well, looks like you have arrhythmia or whatever, or high blood pressure. You have this problem, high blood pressure or whatever, fill in the blank. And so we're going to get you a medication, whatever that is. Okay? They'd name the medication. Huh? Not even name the medication. They would just say, we're going to give you something for that. That's usually what they would say.
Give you something.
Almost categorically. I'm sorry, that's not informed consent. Informed consent is, you've got this problem. The indication is this kind of, the indication is this for this medication and this type of medication. I'm recommending this named medication. It also comes in the generic of this. If I'm telling you the brand name, it's also the generic this. And it has this risk, and you cannot downplay the risk and inflate the benefit just because you want to push a drug. So you have to tell all the risk, all the benefits, right, the real benefits, and then give reasonable alternatives. If you don't want to do this, you could also do that. This isn't cookie cutter medicine where it's just, and gloss over the risk of things just because you want to push something. So anyway, that's what I want people to understand, is that you have a right to know. You don't just take the first car that, the car salesman tells you this is, you need transportation. Well, let me offer you a car. That's not good enough. You would say, okay, there's a lot of different kinds of cars and a lot of different benefits, gas mileage, transmission, all these things that go into why you buy a car, down to the whether it's cloth or leather seats. Why wouldn't you take that much time and effort into making medical decisions about your well-being? That could be life or death. Take the time. Don't feel coerced into giving an answer either. Say, well, that's good information. Thank you. After you've thoroughly asked your questions. And then let me think about that. Unless it is emergent, you should be able to say, let me think about that. Mull on it. Think about it. Ask my family about it. That's a big decision. If it's not immediate, like CPR kind of immediate, you need to be able to think about it. Don't feel pressured or bullied into making a decision.
Well, I think that's the biggest concern people have is the emergency, and that would be my concern because, the car accident, the emergency transition.
Okay, I got an answer for that.
So that's, go ahead.
That's different. Everybody needs two documents at a minimum. You need to pick your medical power of attorney. Right now, everybody needs to have one, and don't just have, your best friend who's great to go drinking with or, likes the same movies. It needs to be somebody who literally has no problem standing up to authority, questioning things, being able to battle for you as if their own life depended on it. That's the person, somebody who's not afraid of confrontation. Pick that person who thoroughly knows what you do not ever want a doctor giving you or doing to you. So pick your medical power of attorney. There's a form, a medical power of attorney form that you can find. They're free, actually. You can go to a lawyer if it makes you feel better, if you want to just spend money, but you can actually get these forms online for free. There's also, you can find that at hospitalhostagehelp.com at the bottom of the page. It'll say, I am medical power of attorney, and there's a form that you can click on. It'll actually take you to a site that provides nationwide documents. So get a medical power of attorney. Choose wisely. Number two, get a medical directive form. So in the event that you are incapacitated, say you're in a car wreck, you find out, you know, you're the medical power of attorney for somebody. Say I am that for you, Greg. I find out that you're in the hospital and you're unconscious and you're on a ventilator now, you're on life support. Now what do? You can't obviously talk. So you can't say, don't give me the COVID vaccine, right? So in that case, you would have already done the work ahead of time. You would have picked me, if you're wise, as your medical power of attorney, because I will make sure they don't do,
I would actually do
anything
that,
you didn't want.
I would trust,
because
you.
It doesn't need to be somebody. It doesn't, medical power of attorneys don't necessarily have to be in proximity even. It's just pick the best one. So have that medical power of attorney. Okay. Yeah. So pick wisely. Get your form, your documentation done ahead of time, right? Send the copy to me if I'm your medical power of attorney. You keep your original in a safe place. And you have medical directives. What are those? Those are that's like a contract that says, in the event that I am incapacitated and I can't say these things with my mouth because now I'm on a ventilator, I'm on life support, I have my absolute do not do these things on there. Absolutely resuscitate me if that's what you want. Or, hey, I don't care to ever be resuscitated. I'm a DNR, okay? That means do not resuscitate. If that's your choice, free will, right? So have that document done and give that to somebody. But you absolutely, everybody needs a current decision document. That's the thing we have that never existed before. Thank you, Jehovah's Witness, for giving us the idea so that we could revise your idea and tailor it to everybody.
How did the Jehovah's Witnesses do during COVID? Because I imagine because they didn't take remdesivir, they didn't have transfusions, they didn't go on ventilators.
The
COVID jab.
Let me tell you a funny story. Is I actually my partner, my OurPatientRights.com partner, the founder of Protocol Kills, Greta Crawford, who I know you know. I was talking to her on the phone because we don't live in the same place, and we talk every single day. And as we're working
None
together to help people in hospital,
I said,
you know, so I'm talking to her. She goes, "Oh gosh, the dogs are going nuts. Someone's at the door." And we had just—I'm not kidding you. We had just said, "Wouldn't it be awesome if we could actually talk to a Jehovah's Witness?" Guess who was at the door? Two Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh no, you're kidding.
Two,
oh, you put them on the show.
I wish we had gotten their names anyway. And I was like, oh, my gosh, God answered our prayers. We said jokingly, but kind of serious, it would be awesome to be able to ask them all the questions, right? Like, how does it work for you guys? So I said, keep them there.
I could actually do that. No, wait a minute. I could do that. I could arrange to have you and a Jehovah's Witness person come on the show together, and you can ask them. Let's work on that.
I said, do not let her get away. Don't let them get away. I said,
No. This is a good idea.
And so we did. So we, for the next 20, 30 minutes, we probably screwed up their door-to-door schedule. But they were like, they were shocked because the first thing out of our mouth was, we are so glad you're here. You are a literal godsend. And they're like, huh? And we're like, yeah, we're Christians. We were praying just a minute ago for, you know, and kind of joking also that, you know, God would send us some Jehovah's Witness to ask these questions about how do they not get blood transfusions if they don't want blood transfusions, even if it's strong.
I can look that up.
Anyway,
I'm sure this is very little. Yeah.
It was hilarious because they're going to, like, after 20 minutes of asking all the questions and having all our suspicions confirmed, they said, we really need to get going.
Did you join? I mean, you took up all their time. It's like spending 3 hours at the youth car lot and not buying anything. I'm just curious.
Listen, for 20 minutes, they didn't even get a word out. They didn't get a word in edgewise about Jehovah's Witness faith.
What
like,
a surprise, Laura.
You can come back if you want to. You can do an encore. But anyway, it was hilarious, but at the same time, confirmed everything. We're like, oh, my gosh, we have got something. We have got something. And they said, we want your document. That's what they said. And they're like, we want that. We said, well, just go to Our Patient Rights. You can get it. because they said we don't get blood transfusions, but we also did not want these other things, and they hadn't taken it that far because, you know, it wasn't, you know, their religious and spiritual beliefs built into their original
right.
document about blood transfusions. They wanted to borrow our ideas, and we wanted to borrow their strategy. It was just wonderful.
What about the Christian Scientists? Because they don't like much medicine at all. How do they do
it? I have no idea. I haven't had one of them ring my doorbell.
Well, no, actually, I could look at. I'm making notes myself here. Let's get the Christian Scientists on too. We'll get one of each.
Well, the main takeaway here is that the Jehovah's
uh-huh.
Witness had a strategy. It's one thing to say we don't believe it and we don't want it. A lot of people said they didn't
right.
want remdesivir. It didn't work. The thing
right.
that was unique to Jehovah's Witness faith is that they literally had a system, a strategy in writing. They literally carry cards with their
right.
their agents that say, hey, in the event of contact these people, they have a whole system. And it's the
yeah,
fact that it was
changed.
In writing and based on their religious and spiritual beliefs.
But something's changed in medicine because when
them.
I went through – yeah, but when I went through heart surgery in 2016, I could ask questions. They would answer
mm-hmm.
them. It was kind of funny. The surgeon was kind of shocked when I walked, and he says, where's your family member? I said, I'm not getting my family anywhere near this decision. I said, those people are dangerous. He said, what?
That's right.
I said, no, I don't trust them. I had a friend watching over me, and she you know, basically made sure nothing bad happened and did an amazing job, but I trusted her. I didn't trust my own family. But everybody's circumstance is different, right? So, and I asked a ton of questions. I had a notebook. The guy was shocked. And then I asked for four more opinions, and it's like, okay, I think you're all, you know, this seems to be, now I'm informed. I was informed of everything. And then 2 weeks later,
right.
you know, they were poking into my heart and trimming things, you know. So,
you're onto something. You're onto something because, you know, I have to
that?
Say this appropriate. My you know, my dad's a surgeon, and
oh,
he has
okay.
kind of knee issues, and he goes, my dad's like, I'm like, Dad, are you going to get that checked out? Are you going to maybe get, you know, knee surgery or see a doctor about that? He goes, hell no. I went to school with those idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, so what changed? This would be an interesting thing. Is something changed in medicine? Because when I went through,
well, yes,
I was
informed.
Well, yes, it's
corporatized now.
Okay, but this is only 2016. You know, COVID, 2017, I think, is when the doctor from Moderna said, we've hacked the software of life. We can do anything now, basically. It was in a TED Talk. So this is only, this is the next year. 2019, you know, you had Event 201, as Naomi mentioned. We all know about that, was the rehearsal for COVID. 2020, it hits. You know, and then it's basically over. I've got the CDC chart. I put it on every single show. The CDC chart that shows the death rate went to zero mid-July of 2020, and then the lie started. So they had to preserve COVID until December when they rolled out their COVID jab. And so all this stuff is pretty easy to find. You know, it's you know, it's out there. But the thing, but something changed in medicine. So what is it when I went through, I thought really good treatment, except for the blood thinner. But it's so, in other words, the surgery was great, but the big pharma drugs almost killed me, you know.
Yes.
And so
yes.
there's something that –
I know what
so,
it is. I have a suspicion.
Go ahead. Tell me.
Okay. All right. Look, and I've been saying this since I've had my hotline, which is you could not have rolled – if the ultimate goal was to push a vaccine and have it adopted,
mm-hmm.
and there was a hardcore push. We had celebrities telling you to do it. It was like this
oh,
big
yeah.
PSA, global PSA, do it or you'll die, right? So they obviously
yep.
wanted a vaccine. You don't need a vaccine if the problem is manageable. Like, we don't have vaccines for strep throat, okay? We just
yep.
take care of strep throat or toe mm-hmm. fungus, right? We don't have a vaccine
yep.
for everything. You don't have the adoption of a vaccine where everybody would even consider it, like they don't for toenail fungus or strep throat. Right? Because
uh-huh.
people go, heck, nobody's really dying from this. Well, where did they die?
And it's treatable.
They died in
right.
hospital. Okay,
yeah.
so if that's your goal, reverse engineering it, is that you cannot have this plan if you really wanted vaccines. Vaccines aren't free, by the way. Someone's getting paid. So there's money attached to it. There's greed.
Mm-hmm.
At a very minimum, there's greed as a motivation. So if you want to disrupt the apple cart, you don't have that piece that's necessary, which is to show that you have a legitimate fear of dying. you have to show, remember all those reports of body bags coming out of hospitals and freezer trucks. You had to show all that to stoke the fear, but you also had to have legitimate fear that was legitimate of people dying. You had to have recorded deaths, right? And we all knew people who died in a hospital with the diagnosis of COVID, right? So you had to have all that working for you. So you would have to push pressure, tamp down from the top down in the hospital structure onto doctors to motivate them to give a protocol. Don't take any guff from the patient saying, hey, wait a second, Remdesivir is killing people. Right. You got to be able to, you need to snuff that out quickly. You're going to have to motivate those doctors to do that, right? So whatever the motivation was, I wasn't in those meetings. I don't know what it is, but I do know that there were doctors who were treated poorly when they tried different things. They were either let go from that hospital or they lost their privileges just by, you know, doing things outside the bounds that they were told to do, right? So there's that pressure. Now, I believe that's the thing that changed pre-COVID and COVID is that you got to have the complicit, have the hospital complicit in doing their part. So I don't know at the upper levels of hospitals what their relationship is with insurance or big pharma, but I believe there's some sort of close relationship there somehow. There has to be to be so instrumental, we'll put it that way. So practical use for these hospitals to cause death.
Yeah. It really is the drugs because the surgery was fabulous. I mean, basically only half my blood flow was going past my heart. The other half was going backwards. When they trimmed the valve, you know, all of a sudden I have 100% blood flow. That was a shock to my system. I gained a ton of weight and now I can exercise like crazy. It's great. I'm getting healthier all the time. So the surgery was great. However,
wonderful.
The drugs were terrible. I mean, why would they go through all the trouble to do the surgery only to kill me 3 weeks later, suffocate me, filling my chest with fluid? And it didn't hurt. That was the weird part. Once it was taken out. And then they wanted to put me back on the same thing I thought killed me. And this is insane.
Yeah.
So the mechanics, you know, the broken arm, the appendix removal, even the heart surgery, the actual surgery, and your father's a surgeon, you know, the surgery, I think, is very good if it's done properly and all the protocols and everything else. I mean, the right ones. However, there's something about the drug that becomes we call it here the Remdesivir ventilator death march. I've been calling it that since 2020, ever since we found out. I knew there was no need for a vaccine because we already had a cure. If you have a cure for a disease, why would you wait 15 years to try and get something that might build up immunity? Maybe that's just irrational to me.
Right.
But speaking of, we had our own.
You gotta have enough. You gotta have enough belief. They have to do some things right. This is my theory. You have to do some things on the surface to look like you're trying, you're doing heroic measures, surgery, heart surgery, whatever, right? But there's so much money in relationship tied to big pharma that you got to have enough trust and buy-in with the general public to go to a hospital, right? They're our savior. They're going to fix us. But it's the medications and the other things that you're talking about. That is very real. That will kill you.
Yeah. Let me play something for you. We had our own PSA. Now, Judy's told me – I don't play this because Judy corrected it. I'll tell you at the end of it. But this is what we used to play back in 2020.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need. It's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
Yeah, I bet you didn't hear that on the local news.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm telling
the truth.
It'll get you in trouble.
Yeah, that was 2021 now I think of it, because the COVID vaccine was out in 2020. So that's, you know, almost 3 years old now. And this is how far ahead we were. But Judy corrected me. She says, well, there are things you can do now, they've discovered, to get over COVID vaccine injury. So that's really good. You can get COVID again if you've had it, but it is rare. I got it, you know, the beginning of 2020 and was fine. I didn't worry about it. Never wore a mask, never did any of that kind of crap. And I certainly wasn't going to take a jab, but just for all those reasons. But there's a couple of things in there that are inaccurate, which is why I don't play it. But just the idea that we were already broadcasting our own PSA saying, don't get this thing. Do you wonder why we're censored?
Yeah, you're definitely a before your time. That's wonderful. Yeah. I'd like to know if there's anybody else out there like that. So that's awesome.
Oh, there's those of us out here. You know, and the funny thing is, we didn't know about each other at the time. You know, we have Dr. Deborah Viglione, who's doing treatments that are working. Jim Thorpe's down here. Judy Mikovits is out on the West Coast. You're in Texas. You know, we have different people from all over the place calling in. I'm not sure where Naomi is. I think she's East Coast somewhere up northeast. You know, so all people from all over the country have called in the show today. You know, and this is fascinating.
Oh,
but we're
awesome.
Becoming one big – we're kind of like – I call it the Do Something Club. Those of us that are actually doing something. So let's talk about that for a minute. So what is it about the psychology? And this has been great. We only have about 26 minutes left. You know, I had no idea what was going to happen on the show today. I figured I'd get the interview in, maybe do an hour and I'd be done. But this has been great. So thank you for all the extra time. But Do Something Psychology. Naomi's a doer, although I want to try and get her more reporting on our legislation. That's my next step. Judy's a doer. She talks about our big tech bill and our vaccine product liability bill everywhere she goes. You're a doer. You've got ourpatientrights.com. You know, I'm a doer. Created a citizen legislature. So there are doers out there, and we are kind of finding each other, but there's still too many, you know, raising, complaining to an art form. The talk show host, all they do is talk.
Mm-hmm.
The reporters just report. It's like, we don't have time for that anymore. You've got to cross over and become, you can't be a conservative journalist anymore. You've got to be a conservative news advocate. You've got to start advocating solutions. It's not enough to report anymore, because there's too many people reporting wrong stuff, and they've got programs that are killing people. What?
Yeah, I almost see it. Have you ever heard the phrase, Greg? No.
Oh, of course. That's Rahm Emanuel.
Okay.
I never said it. Yep.
Yeah. And so I'm seeing that in the independent journalism category or Patriot business platform, I'll just say it, I see a lot of opportunists in that area. It's like, well, dang, there's a – let's create a – this product or that product. I'm not saying all of them are that way, but I'm seeing a lot of that supersede actual solutions, so that we don't need your dang product. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to work myself out of a non-paying job. You know, I don't mind getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and talking to people when they call me on the hotline.
Well, you should do your own show.
Ideally.
Why don't you do a show and make it an Action Radio affiliate? We'll build our own network. You know, I'll get a website. We'll get you on there. I've got some other folks that could do it. I'm sure Judy would do a weekly show. She'd love it. You know, she wouldn't even need callers. She'd just start talking for an hour. You know,
yeah.
Judy's amazing. But, I mean, we need to build an Action Radio network and get our own website. I mean, ultimately, that's where I'd like to go.
I think that'd be awesome.
Except this morning. Yeah, so those are things we need to start talking about. But you need to generate revenue. This is why I wanted a talk show along with a citizen legislature, because I don't want to be in a position of them making money at this. Quite selfishly, I want a jet. There's nothing wrong with doing well when you're doing good. And so the people that are doing terrible things are making a fortune. So why should Big Pharma? Go ahead.
I've noticed, though, unfortunately, I've noticed that there is a suppression of the actual solution, because it really does cut into profits. We saw it with Hofkane. Mm-hmm. If they would have adopted ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine as part of their treatment protocol, as opposed to remdesivir, which caused kidney failure and primes you for a ventilator, my gosh, the money
which
train
will kill you if
is,
the remdesivir doesn't. You know, so yeah.
Yes, right. And so their protocol makes more money. Let's just call it what it is. Makes infinitely more money than a protocol that is pennies on the dollar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be in and out. Your hospital stays would be less. You'd be turning those beds over faster. You wouldn't have needed a ventilator, which is outrageous amounts of money for these people. It's like adding, what's the saying, insult to injury or injury to insult, whatever.
Oh, I was
on
one.
And then they die.
I was on one for heart surgery. In fact, they stopped my heart and lungs. So I know I was dead for 4 hours clinically. So I know. So I got experience with ventilators. I never want that tube down my throat again. Never.
Yeah, yeah. It's not comfortable. It's not pleasant to be paralyzed, put on a paralytic, and have a tube down your throat.
And mine was properly. And they did it properly with me.
Yeah, in certain interventions, it's necessary. And I'm not poo-pooing hospitals for the sake of just poo-pooing hospitals. I'm not dumb. It's like if I'm in a car wreck, please take me somewhere where they've got the equipment and the personnel to put me back together if my leg is cut off, okay?
Yep.
Because I can't do that in my kitchen with a flashlight and a pocket knife and scissors. Yeah,
exactly.
I can't do that.
Needle
so
thread.
I'd rather go to a hospital. Mm-hmm. So the thing, the thing, though, is that there is always a bottom line consideration when it is a for-profit. And even if you say you're a nonprofit hospital, you're still making money. There are salaries being paid. There's just by name only, that's not convincing me that you're not motivated to push certain things because it's for the best for the patient. That's not true. I don't believe it. So there's always money exchanging hands. So I think that that's what people need to understand is that just because you're going to a hospital and they may have saved your life, like you've said over and over again, they may have saved your life with an emergency intervention. In the hospital recovery phase, you may be given a medication that could harm you, and you would be wise to ask, what are the risks of this medication or blood that you were.
Informed.
You did. I'm talking to our listeners.
Yeah.
Our listeners. Right. You did it just right, Greg. I'm talking about our listeners would be wise
start
getting it hardwired into your brain to question that expert, the guy who will be happy in the last 3 years to remind you you didn't go to 8 years of medical school. I've been asked that by doctors. Well, how many years of medical school have you had? I don't need to be a mechanic to ask questions about the car I'm about to purchase.
Uh-huh.
It, you know, that does not disqualify me from questioning what's in my best interest. And so that's where people need to be empowered that they can do that. But I'm going to say that there has been suppression even in the independent news media. I've had interviews from Patriot shows, quote unquote, that cut out the 15 most important minutes. It literally, they laid black over the interview. That was Greta Crawford on that interview. My co-founder, the founder of Protocol Skills, in the most important part of the interview, it went black, and then they censored out. This is a Patriot news show. These are big names.
Do you want to name them? You can name them. I don't mind.
You know, I'm a little leery because this one particular show said, "Aren't you afraid that you're going to be on some kind of hit list?" Okay, and this is a Patriot show. We're talking.
Well,
big name.
If you're not on a hit list, what's the point? I've been on a hit list since I had friends in East Berlin when I went there in the 80s. You know, the Berlin Wall.
You kind of set your intentions.
I've always been on it.
When somebody who's hosting the show tells you, the same person I said, I will go on your show if you will allow me to actually explain it without interrupting me, without patronizing or making light of it, if you'll let me get my message out. And I was told, this is my show and I'll do it my way. I said, okay,
well,
I don't think it'll work for me. And I understand that,
but it's
so critical for people to have, I've had experience where this is the show that censored. This is why I'm saying this. I need to get the information out. I thought I'd give it another shot and I'll do it. Maybe I'll be treated differently. And this particular show said, the host, it's my show, and I'll do it any way I want to because it's my show. Well, you just told me you did not take responsibility for cutting out the 15 most important minutes. And we're not talking about something that's, you know, been around for years and years. This is a new strategy that literally can save your life. It's going to take some explaining.
Yep.
So I'm disappointed in that. That for whatever reason, there is censorship even among the Patriot movement, the Freedom movement, whatever you want to call it, the Red, White, and Blue movement.
Well, they want ratings and they want the attention, but they don't actually want to change anything. It's like members of Congress who talk about, you know, we're going to take our country back, and then I give them the ways to do it, you know, vaccine legislation, something totally unrelated, our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Now, the states would love that, and they should be pushing this, but that would solve 95% of our economic problems. What's that?
Well, yes, and that's true, and that's a parallel with like the other podcast shows that aren't like yours where you actually give solutions. But the motivation for not giving the solution, I think I have a hunch. Doctors are a big lobbying power. Doctors, hospitalists, ones that work in the hospital, they donate to your cause. They're part of your platform. They're people who in some way support your businesses, your media enterprise or whatever, your products, whatever it is, they are big donors and contributors. And you don't want to upset them. You don't want to upset them. Yeah. You want to keep them in your good graces. You don't want to tell, you don't want them to know patients. We the people actually are empowered and now have a way to be empowered where we hold them accountable. They don't like that. So actually tells you how to hold them accountable.
Yeah. Say that again. I think I might have interrupted you, which I tend to do a lot anyway.
So the bottom line is they don't want to be aligned with the truth of the matter, which is we the people sharing the information that I tried to share on this particular platform, not yours, another one. And I said, I need to actually get the information, which is new, never existed before. A lawyer won't tell you this. A doctor won't tell you this. You literally had to be from the inside of the medical industrial complex. It was an insider who came to me and said, I have an idea. I know what you're doing. And this, I believe, this revision document will stop them from giving you remdesivir. It will stop them cold turkey from giving you any drug or treatment or artificially writing a do not resuscitate on your chart as a doctor against your will. And this is how you do it. And the reason why I believe they did not, these other platforms won't do this is because they're supported, financially supported by doctors. That's my hunch. I believe they are a big lobbying power.
Every newscast is says sponsored by Pfizer. You know, I get that all the time. But you get alternate sponsors. Like, I want to go after, we just had Andy Ross on the show, American Rebel. You know, I'll be talking to him off the air. I want to get the gun companies, you know, Glock, Smith & Wesson. I want to get My Patriot Supply. I want to get Chick-fil-A. I want the Christian companies. I want Black Rifle Coffee. I want the veteran companies. There's an entire economy of America First political activists that I think, once they know about it, you know, would be happy to support this show, would be happy to support your future show. But, you know, it does take money to fight these people, and I understand that. But here's something, as you were talking, too. The one of the things that changed is that in when I went to the hospital, the incentive was to save my life because the insurance paid, and there was no malpractice. Malpractice takes away money. So the incentive was to save me, and of course they did. They did a really good job, except for the drug stuff, because they just started to make money. But there came a point with COVID where they made more money killing people. They made more money on remdesivir and ventilators than on a 20-cent hydroxychloroquine tablet. I figured you could cure COVID and most people for about $20. You take a week's worth of hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, you know, zinc, and it costs about $20, right? And so if you could cure everybody for $20, you could take that out of the Ukraine budget. There would be no borrowing of $7 trillion. We could have cured COVID for nothing. And even if you just gave people preventive hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, it's not going to hurt you. Those are two of the safest drugs out there, or quercetin, which is a non-prescription. But the problem was it was so much more – people were worth more dead than alive. And I think that's where one of the biggest changes was. What do you think?
I do. I agree with that. I mean, when I would advocate for patients to get budesonide, because by the time they go to the hospital, they can't breathe. Well, it kind of makes sense to give them something – patients request something that helps them breathe, right? A steroid that goes directly to your lungs.
Well, why couldn't they breathe? When I had COVID, I had a really bad cough.
Everybody had different levels. Everybody's different. Okay. I didn't ever have that problem, but I know people in my immediate family who had I had contact with. I was in circles with my family on a daily basis, and they had their body, for whatever reason, reacted differently than my body to COVID, where they literally lost. You can measure it with a pulse oximeter that their oxygen levels went severely low. And to bring it up, what would bring it instantly up is a few puffs of an inhaled steroid in the lungs, because it's stopping the cytokines from going out the lungs, the cytokine storm. So anyway, it improved oxygenation immediately. So if they could get that outpatient, that that usually turned COVID around within 3 to 5 days, just doing that alone, okay? So, but it's like, what, $3 a dose? Cheap, right? Yeah. You're not going to push that. Yeah. That's why I had such a hard time getting that message out to the world, was that, and why it was so censored, even though the Oxford University study was eventually done a year after my talking about it. Oxford proved that it was 90% effective preventing urgent care visits and hospitalizations. And people who were on ventilators were able to get off ventilators. Not everybody, because everybody's body's different and compromised in different ways. But it had success in getting people off ventilators and going home, budesonide alone, okay, and some other medications that they had, other things they were doing, like blood thinners and things, keep them from having clots that would be problems.
Oh,
so,
yeah, blood thinners. Yeah, but, yeah, those are really effective. Yeah, those are good. Sorry.
I know. But what I'm saying is they were given other things. I didn't want to be disingenuous and say it was just budesonide. But I'm telling you, the thing that moved the needle was the thing they added when we wrestled the doctor, negotiated like a hostage negotiation, please give this patient a 24, 48-hour trial of budesonide. If you see no harm, no foul, then we'll consider continuing it, right? But at least give them a trial of 24, 48 hours of something that was already in your hospital pharmacy. Every pharmacy had it, 2 pounds, neonatal intensive care babies are on budesonide routinely because they have underdeveloped lungs. So if it's safe enough for a 2-pound human being, it's likely going to be very safe. It has such an incredible safety profile. So anyway, that's part of the work I would do with my hospital hostage hotline, was talking to the doctor and negotiating these things like, stop doing this, do that. That was before I had this document. This document makes those things, those heartaches and struggles, a thing of the past. You won't need to go through all that, you know, negotiation process if they just know from the moment you walk in, I'm not doing these things. You're not doing these things to me. Your license, criminal charges, and adjudicated a 7- or 8-figure judgment because it's intentional tort. It's not malpractice.
Right.
Doctors, like you said, hospitals have had this kind of free, you know, it's kind of like the teacher's out of the room, substitutes in here. We can do whatever we want. We're going to act like, you know, animals in the classroom because the real teacher's out. It's a substitute. So we're going to do whatever we want. No consequences. That's the kind of attitude hospitals have had and doctors have had. They are have been the most obnoxious, arrogant people I have ever encountered in my life in the last 3 years,
being on the phone with these doctors. So you don't count.
What'd you say?
Yeah. I said, you haven't been to med school, so your opinion doesn't count. Only the opinion of people who are as mind-locked in the as they are. So that's the problem with the expert. I mean, I think we only get about, believe it or not, we only have about 8 minutes left. This has been fabulous.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's okay. You're on a roll. I'm just happy to have you here. So a couple questions, though, before you go. Dr. Mercola, you mentioned him a few times, and you talk about the gold lining.
Yeah, love that guy.
Are you still in contact with him?
I can be. I mean, we don't talk every day, but.
Well, no, I don't expect you to, like, you know, compare what you have for lunch, but I'm just thinking that if I've been trying to get in touch with him to get him our legislation, the two big ones, vaccine product liability and big tech censorship, because those are the two things that killed the most people because they got the jab.
Oh, I'd be happy to pass that.
Just send our bills along to him. You've got our legislation. Yeah. I can get it to you. But, yeah, I'd be curious. Okay, well, this is what we do. So if he starts talking about it, so here's the thing. The biggest problem I have, the legislation, the writing, it's easy. I mean, I can write a bill in 3 hours. You know, I usually mm-hmm. think about it for about a month. We have a new one on if anybody's investigating. This would apply to doctors too. And we have if the government's investigating somebody, they have to spend a fortune to defend themselves, even if they're innocent, right? So I wrote a bill that says they get, first of all, a defense equity payment, so that the government has to give them the same amount of money they have spent investigating them, and they can still bill the government for compliance costs, lawyers, you know, paperwork, consultants, anything like that, until you're proven guilty. So you should suffer no penalty until you're proven guilty. Now, there's something that doctors could use, you know, especially by medical boards and things
yeah.
like that.
Oh, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because, look, mm-hmm. I talk a lot about consequences to doctors, but there's benefits
right.
to this form, like your legislation in my
yep.
form. It gives good doctors in a system that they are now starting to wake up. This is a bad idea. But
yeah.
for whatever reason, they feel like they don't have mm-hmm. a voice against the administration, the people who actually own the facility that they work in.
Mm-hmm.
They can push back and say, oh, no, no, we're not doing that anymore. I am not going to do
right.
this or that because my license and I could go to jail. It gives them something to push
yeah.
back
you
on.
Need
they
to make
love
it.
The doctors love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be as serious a penalty as malpractice was. So the incentive is to save people. I mean, they should do that anyway because they're doctors. That's what they're supposed
yeah.
to do. That's why they started this business. But because they become co-opted and, you know, just following orders and just taking the
mm-hmm.
money at the same time, which is worse than just following orders because, you know, then they've really corrupted themselves. But
agreed.
We need the same penalty as the same strength of penalty as malpractice, you know, in terms of violating contracts and violating informed consent and everything else. There's something else I want to talk to you about, and I've got my list of things. I think that's about it. But as far
patients that want to be empowered, I just want you know, next time a doctor suggests something, say you first. How would that have worked with a
Well, now here's my pet theory that you've noticed that nobody in the health professions, none of the government public health people at the state or federal level, has been reported to have died suddenly. Not
yeah.
Dr. Fascist, not
it's
Dr. Burr.
It's kind of like a poison, right? A poison drink. You know,
yeah.
The king would have tasters or whatever. It's like
nobody in Congress.
You
either.
Drink it.
Have you noticed that? Nobody in Congress, no city mayors, no mm-hmm. governors. I mean, nobody, you know,
yep.
I mean, entertainers, sure, because they're expendable, right? Sports stars, who
yeah.
cares, right? You know, that makes
right.
a big splash. But you'll notice that nobody in power, in a position of power, has died from a COVID
That's
shot.
Very
curious.
How
about that?
Just a coincidence.
Now, of course it is. Now, we don't call them conspiracy theorists on Action Radio. We call them ongoing investigations.
Yes. Yeah, when was the last time you ever saw a doctor on a ventilator or having given five rounds of remdesivir like my co-founder Greta Crawford, you know? No, you just don't see it. You bring up a good point. So next time you're in the hospital for any reason, start with that
mm-hmm.
question.
Hmm.
You first.
It was so good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and I don't know how we change this culture because this is just an amazingly
consequences. But it's not going to be top down.
Yeah.
It's going to be we the people pushing up. It's going to be the patient is going to change the culture. The patient has to start asserting their rights and demanding that they get informed consent, which is truly not this is the problem. You get this. It's asking what are the risks, benefits, and alternatives. Don't wait for the doctor to get around to telling you. You initiate that conversation.
Well, is there a penalty in your contract if they lie to you, like perjury? If you lie in court, you know, you can go to jail. But
well,
if you lie
now,
to a patient,
well, we don't have it'll get flushed out because the patient, unfortunately, it's a he said she said thing in a hospital. The doctor controls the record, right? The
right.
last comment about an issue is recorded by the doctor or the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Not the patient. They don't get to say their two cents, right? That's why it's so
important.
Well,
wait a minute. Well, why don't you add that
ahead
to the contract that the patients can't – there should be a place on every medical record for the patient to put their comments in. How about adding that to the contract?
I don't
Think about it.
I don't know. I'll think about it with my insider. But what we want to do is hold them accountable for doing things to your body that you absolutely don't want. They don't get to make decisions and just do things like you're a lab rat. You've got to usurp the whole process by going into the hospital with this contract. It's a doctor-patient contract. It's not the general consent. It is a, hey, doctor, this is what you are going to agree to, or we don't do medicine here. We go down the street. We'll take our business somewhere else. And by the way, people need to understand, you're not marrying the hospital or a doctor, okay? You're not even dating them. You can break up. Go to the hospital across the street, go across town, go to a yep. different state. You know, no divorce papers need to be filed. You're just going to go. Just move. Now, I understand when a lot of people, I don't mean send people who are low oxygen or they're in a car wreck. You can't do that at that point. That's why it's really important to have your ducks in a row and have your documentation ready and then
right.
deliver it in a timely way, which is when you are that person in a hospital.
Hmm. Do you think that you could put something into the contract, or people should just be doing this? I do this anyway. But one thing, the price of something, so people know how much it costs, and required to give alternatives. So in other words, the doctor would say, well, we've got the COVID shot, or you can just boost your immune system. You know, we've got remdesivir, or we can give you hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, which costs, you know, 20 cents a pill as opposed to $3,200 for remdesivir. The side effects are this and that. I mean, how much should we be requiring?
We don't want it to be a kitchen sink document. This is literally, that's why you have an advanced directive. You start weakening the document when it's an all-encompassing thing. It's a will, and it's also
right.
a directive, and it's also
so
a...
Then you just like guideline or a right to be, or how would you do it?
Here's what I... Well, let me tell you what I encourage people to do, and we will be providing a template for like a journal. People need to journal when they're in the hospital. What did that? Who was that person you talked to? What time was it? What did you discuss? You keep your own journal, okay?
Oh, that's
what
yeah.
that doc right? You keep your own notes, and if the patient can't do it because they're so weak, it's the family that's going to get involved, or your advocate, the person you picked as your medical power attorney. Or your
right.
surrogate. Surrogates are your next of kin. You get people involved. If you're too weak and you're like on painkillers, you're groggy, that's when you need to rely on people. People are not an island unto themselves. Unfortunately, when you're in a crisis, please reach out. That's the appropriate time to bother somebody, if you want to call it bothering. But that's the way they're going to do it, is to keep records. You need to keep records of your own. What did they tell you? Did they tell you? They told me this was the only risk. They told me this was the only benefit. And then you agreed to it. You've got now a record of your own that attests to your experience, because they have been really, really maverick and